Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and that trilling hi-hat means it's time for the big show with Mr. Jeff Cannata, who is also the two guys from The Balcony and The Muppet Show.
I am?
Yeah, did you not see that?
Waldorf and
Statler.
Statler, yeah.
Whoa, you guys know the names.
Boom.
That's fantastic. So as you might have heard there, that's Sterling McGarvey from EGMI across from me.
Hi, guys.
Welcome.
Ladies. Thank you. Glad to finally make it.
Oh, I know why you didn't get that reference.
Why didn't I get that reference?
Because that was a post on Gaff.
Yeah, I can't post there, so I don't read there.
Why can't you post there?
Don't get me started.
They don't like him or something.
I don't know what it is. I can read. I can log in. I just can't post.
Which is funny because I think I registered stealthily like 6 years ago and just quietly like only posted in the soccer thread. Huge surprise. And then occasionally I'd pop up in something else and then nobody would really notice and I'd just go back into hiding.
But you know what? Shaq is better anyway.
This is true.
So
this is true.
That's where the real conversations happen.
So they said that because of, if you remember, if you listened to last week's GDC show, you had that part where you were like chiming in from the sidelines.
Oh, that's why I was.
They're like, it's like the two guys in the balcony of the Muppet Show.
That sucks. Get off the stage, you bum.
We could totally use that on this show sometimes.
These guys are great.
All right. Well, also on this show, we're going to do some GDC catch-up. Sterling did a lot of panels last week, and there's some people who are like, why did you just talk about the Iwata thing and not any of the other awesome stuff at GDC? So we'll do that. Some Dragon Age game came out. I don't know. Have you heard of this?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it's on the 360, right?
I think it's an exclusive.
It's a 360. Oh, God. Let's go get into that trouble. We have other games we saw at GDC to catch up on. Torchlight XBLA came out. I saw Alice Madness Returns. Sterling has played Fight Night Champion, which is quietly developing a really good grassroots buzz. So we got lots of games to talk about. You like it, huh?
Yes, I do. But
the people at the Gamefly Appreciation / We Can Confirm / Shack News night the other night were loving it.
That was a crazy party, by the way.
It was a crazy party. They were thanks for everybody who came out. But the thing that we were stationed sort of right next to a Fight Night console.
And you wanted to play that.
And I kept hearing, oh, from the crowd. Like there was these knockouts happening and people were going crazy. It was awesome.
Dude, Fight Night has always had that, though, really well. Like the visceral moment, especially as the fight gets further in. And you know, they've always been big on all the facial. You could really see when you're beating the fuck out of someone.
The deformation.
Yeah, the deformation. And like remember that? That was like a feel video from like three versions ago where they had that deal where the dude got punched in the mug and his like jaw dislocated and the spit
and
blood came flying off.
Oh, yeah, you can see the spit and like the facial movement of like the impact. But my favorite is like, I should probably save some of this for later, but I love every time there's a knockdown. It almost sounds like the slow motion noises of like a truck running into a side of beef or something. It's just like
that's a hell of a Foley. Right? All right, well, we'll do that first. We'll real quickly. The rest of what we got is we've got a couple of comments on Bulletstorm Apologists. We've got a little bit on whether or not middle class gaming is dead, and then I've got a whole bunch of news at the end. And we're apparently going to sing a news theme again because that works out really well.
Because you demanded it.
Because you demanded. Oh, and we also have featured music, which is from Tabernacle MCZ, and the track is Spirit. So back to boxing, since we already started about boxing. What the hell has got people so excited about this Fight Night? Because I thought Fight Night was kind of ready to quietly make like the heavyweight class of real boxing and just fade away.
Mm. Yeah, but they never retire, right? They always unretire. Just, I don't know, it was a bad reference. Go ahead.
It's okay.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing is, like, the problem, I think, and, like, heavyweight boxing is interesting. Like, the problem I think it has is Klitschko is actually one of the better fighters that there's ever been historically. He hasn't really had anyone to fight, and he just doesn't have, and on top of that, for some reason, he just hasn't had a North American appeal.
Well, it's arguably like Tyson was in the 80s, because the prime time for heavyweights, in my opinion, was in the 1970s. That's when you had Ali, you had Foreman, you had everybody. And it was kind of like, by the time Tyson showed up, everybody was kind of past their prime. They weren't really boxing so much anymore.
You're not... You're not into the real deal?
I'm kind of mad on Holyfield historically. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's funny. Like, I was actually, when I was reviewing Champion, I was thinking that, like, every step of the way that I've ever been reviewing games, like, wherever I was, I've always reviewed every Fight Night game. So I'm, like, very, I feel pretty intimately.
You're versed in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have an idea of it, which is funny because part of the reason I used to review them was because I also used to watch boxing a lot more. It's kind of the same way I used to review WWE games back in the day. I stopped watching wrestling. I think getting married kind of kills my urge to watch wrestling. It's like, yeah, you can't get away with watching that stupid shit at home.
Well, but, at least, well, but I'm not going to make that joke.
No, but I mean, like, boxing-wise, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like sometime around, like, late 05, early 06, I just kind of tapered off and just started playing Fight Night. So my analogies about Klitschko and whatnot, I'm not going to make an ass of myself by trying to, like, go out there and say, well, it's more like this character, and then somebody calling me out on gaffe about it.
So how's the game?
But that said,
so what is it about this
fantastic
game? Why are people excited about it again?
You know, it's weird. Like, it's the way they started up. So there's a story mode to it, which works really, really well, I think. It's almost like a 5.5 hour tutorial with a lot of drama. And, like, people might try to, like,
I love tutorial drama.
Well, no, it's like people try to front on the fact that it's not like a pastiche of boxing movie cliches. Like, you start off in prison beating the shit out of some dude in the Aryan Nation. He may not have swastikas on him, but it's pretty obvious what this dude is. So you're, like, in prison, bare-knuckle boxing, beating the shit out of this guy. And then the next thing you know, you go to the showers or whatever, and him and his buddies beat the crap out of you. They stomp on your hand. And, like, you know, then they flash forward to, how did you end up in prison? And so they go through this origin story, and it's like, I've seen this before. I'm expecting this plot swerve. Sometimes the plot swerve doesn't happen. Sometimes you're like, oh, that was predictable, kind of like the sun came up today. But overall, what they do is they'll take, like, all of these challenges, and they make them feel kind of organic and credible to the story. So case in point, when I was talking about how the guy's hand gets broken in prison, later on in the game, you're boxing a match, and they're like, oh man, on that last round, he totally broke his hand on that dude's face. And you know from the beginning of the game that that's an existing injury and a problem.
So I think that's fantastic.
It's awesome.
That's
so you have
cool.
to win the fight only fighting with your left hand. And if you continue to use your right hand, you will screw it up and you will lose more stamina and do more damage to yourself. So they do a great job of making it flow organically, but... I mean, the story's kind of like, it's a little hokey, it's very linear. I mean, in this case, it's their first effort, so I'll give them a pass on that. I'm sure in the next one, they're already going, okay, how are we going to do the next Fight Night? We're going to have branching storylines. But for what they're doing for a first-time effort, I think it's a great reinvention of the series. Yeah, it's M, you know, and the whole M rating thing is kind of like, it gets, they can spice it up, you know, they can say fuck, hooray. And but when it's done, you're just like, after you've beaten the last boxer, and he's a son of a bitch, and they design him that way, so he's supposed to be really tough. Afterwards, you're like, I am badass. Let's go through the normal legacy mode.
Oh, that makes yeah,
I think that's great.
That makes total sense.
I think that's a great addition to the game. I'm really thrilled. I have it at home, and I haven't just haven't opened it yet, so I'm excited to try it out.
They also they do.
I like I like how much, like, even just the way Sterling just told me that story led me right up to that, and he's like, "Okay, let's go through the real part of the game now." Like, that totally clicks for me now. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because when you played normal legacy mode in Fight Night Round 4, it was kind of like, okay, here's a bunch of text prompts of what you're going to do. Here's a bunch of scheduling. I mean, it's just like any other sports game at that point. It's kind of like, all right, well, here's your challenges. Who's who you can pick from. Here's how you train. There's all that kind of stuff. And you can do that, but having, like, this extra element of drama.
Do they do
is,
more
like,
than the broken right hand to, like, teach you how to fight? Because I'm thinking, like, when my right hand's broken now, I got to protect my side. I got to figure out how to block.
Yeah, of course.
It's like teaching you all the mechanics.
I'm kind of smiling as I say this because I'm thinking they do it in, like, traditional EA fashion. So what they'll do is they'll have a cutscene where you're training in the gym and somebody will go,
and you have to register your domain online.
Yeah, so there's that too. What they'll they telegraph everything for you. Almost like Punch Out, so to speak. But they telegraph it. So you're in the training room, like you're on the punching bag or whatever, and somebody comes in and says, hey, we booked you a fight against this guy. Oh, by the way, watch his left. His left is really dangerous. And you're like, okay, cool. Keep boxing. Fades out. Goes to the next match. And then it comes in as the match is starting. It will prompt you in the lower right corner, watch out for his left. And then you keep on
he's
boxing.
He's got a Band-Aid over his belly button.
And the announcers are like, holy crap, that guy's got a really devastating left hook. So it's kind of like, watch his left. If you don't get it, watch his left. So they do a bit of that.
Does it light up orange right before it comes at you?
It might as well.
Here's that big left. Oh!
Oh, no! Here comes that devastating left hook. Oh, but it's been blocked. You might want to be careful. He might try to throw another. Devastating left hook. Yeah, there's
I like how he even went into EA Sports Stitch mode. You might want to throw another left hook.
Exactly. But, you know, that said, even then, the challenges, they still work. There's kind of a bit of go with it. And I think if you're... You know, if you go in whining about it, I mean, what do you want them to do? It's their first effort, and you know the second one, because there's inevitably they're going to continue on this. That's when we'll get a much more improved and what I like to call the real version of what they probably wanted to do.
Yeah, but, you know, we sort of have a tendency to do that anyway. Like, we see the next thing EA's doing, and we're always like, okay, well, we'll give them a pass on the first one, and then we'll see the real one next time. But the next time, they always have, like, the next big thing they're trying to figure out, so... I don't know. Now I'm kind of interested to play it.
I think story mode in a sports game is
well, especially
a great
in
idea.
Boxing, because boxing is all about characters and personality, and it's a one-on-one sort of sport. And you have characters that you identify with. You know, you're either like a De Hoya fan, or you know, you're a Chavez fan, or you're always a fan of. And there's like reasons, whatever they are. I mean, some of them are intangible. Some of them might be like you like the way he fights, you like his style, and
but there's no reason you couldn't bring that into, say, a tennis game. Or, I mean, there's a whole bunch of games that are sort of.
Well, I thought you were
going to
start talking about Top Spin 4 now.
Well, yeah, I haven't
played it. I was actually thinking about the drama of tennis. Like, yeah, can you imagine McEnroe sitting there in the background, like, now fucking hit that shot! Or something like that.
Out! That was not out!
That wasn't out!
Well, in the same way that Puzzle Quest basically took Bejeweled and made it interesting, I think you could do the same. In the same way, you could take basically having the fighting mechanic. Which is, you know, in boxing is actually fighting, but in tennis is, you know, that's the fighting mechanic is playing tennis.
So you want to make Fight Night Quest?
Not exactly. I mean, I like it contextual for you know, in an appropriate way. It's appropriate to boxing and it could be appropriate to tennis, but you could have the matches be the fights between the story moments of and make it almost more a role playing game. I think that's a really interesting
you slap on different challenges to it because
at a certain point, a lot of these games, the iteration of them, it doesn't really improve upon the actual. Sport.
Totally.
Know? Like boxing, maybe, but I think Fight Night has gotten to a point where the actual fighting is excellent.
Definitely. I love what they've done. I mean, besides the story, which we can go on about, I love what they've done with the core mechanic. I love the fact that now you can, when you're holding up a block, you can now punch out of a block. Mm. That's like a whole new defensive tactic. And it seems like the last game was very much like a splitting point for a lot of people. There were people who had either picked up Fight Night with Round 3 because it looked awesome when the 360 came out. There were also people who had been playing from the beginning. Like my cousin and I used to have legendary weekends where we just hang out at his apartment in Hollywood and just beat the crap out of each other at Round 2. And it would be like, okay, there's a no parry rule because the parrying was so broken that I remember when Kudo Sonoda was working on those games, even he was like, dude, I played online and like these kids have turned my game into Tekken. But it's like when you go through like that background, that history, like that richness of seeing how it's evolved and how they've like redone the parrying system, how they've redone haymakers. It's like Round 4 was when they did away with the parrying and they changed the countering and they changed the blocking and everything. And there are some people that got so pissed off at those changes, they walked away. And this is like the next step past that fork in the road. And I'm still with it. I loved Round 4, despite it being so, I don't want to say, it's very polarizing.
Right on. Right on. What else? What else have you been playing?
Me?
Yeah.
Dragon Age 2.
On the 360, as I heard earlier, despite calls for your head after not playing the PC version on the original.
Calls for my head is an understatement. Yeah, I was very much chastised for playing not on the PC.
Self-included, not playing Dragon Age 1 on the PC, fully missed it.
That may be the case.
But it probably spared you the heartbreak.
The heartbreak of the sequel?
Two. Yeah.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It feels like an improvement in a lot of ways for the sequel for me, because it is more appropriate on the console. I lay the groundwork. People probably have heard me talk about Dragon Age Origins before, but it's a game that I had major problems with when I was playing it, but I loved the experience of playing that game. And in retrospect, I think it has even grown in my estimation because the writing of that game is so strong and there are so many great decision moments and such shades of gray that it even outshines Mass Effect in my mind as far as a role-playing experience, because it's more akin to the kinds of role-playing experiences that I appreciate rather than that Paragon Renegade you know, dichotomy, that the real binary choice, there really, it feels like I'm in a story and there are hard decisions to make rather than just clear cut ones.
Well, I think a lot of that had to do with the layering of the characters with whom you were playing. What, you know, all of them had their plus sides and their minus sides.
Right.
And they were all in those shades of gray. So it wasn't always completely clear, like, well, is this the good path or is this the bad path? You could sort of kin it out. You'd be like, oh, okay, this is probably the good path.
Shades of gray. It's all, there's pluses and minuses to every decision. There's like, well, that's going to screw over these people, but it's going to do well for these people. And neither of them are pure good or pure evil. It's more like life, I like to say. You know, it's these decisions are interesting rather than like, well, I'm going to be evil guy or I'm going to be good guy, you know? And I think that is the part of Dragon Age 2 that still shines. And it's strong, strong writing is...
Hold on a second. That's so funny because remember when we were talking in the pre-show, like the biggest knock I've heard from people is that... And actually, I'm sorry, not the biggest, but the most troublesome knock to me is that one of the things I've heard from people who played it early is, well, it's really long and it doesn't feel as satisfying in its length. It doesn't feel like the characters and the story are as well put together or worth, you know, it's one thing to put 60 hours into a game. When you get to the end of the 60 hours, you're like, holy crap, I just went through this like amazing epic story. And they get to the end, they're like, well, it had some characters and there were some things that happened and it just didn't live up to my 60.
Yeah, so maybe
do you
think
it was that sharp?
Well, maybe I should parse that a little more tightly because I would say it's not plotted as strongly as the first game, but it's still written very strongly. It's
I see where I think I see. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think moment to moment, quest to quest, the quests are interesting. The decisions are still interesting. I think the characters are interesting. I find the situations that I'm in, I want to hear the discussions. I want to investigate more. I'm able to respond in ways that are not just clear, good or bad. I can, you know, there's always like a make a joke version of the response, but it's just an evil response or a good response. It's more nuanced than that. And I appreciate that. I'm invested in the discussions. I think that the writing on a whole of the concepts that they're dealing with, the sort of moral ambiguities that happen, are still great successor to the first game.
Okay, it's, so since we're into, not to cut you off, but I want to, like, since we're like, before we get the people in the audience who haven't and got a lot of familiarity with the game completely lost, Dragon Age 2, quick like overview, what's it about? What is it?
Well, I think that's the plotting problem, is that I'm, what, about 12 hours in, and I'm not really sure what it's about.
Oh,
it's about being an adventurer who solves a lot of cool problems and puts together this awesome team, but they're really...
Are you still a warden? I mean...
No, you're not a Grey Warden. In fact, you know, one of the great things about that first game is that you really got to select... It was called Origins, and you got to select your origin among several options, and there, you don't have that ability anymore. You're playing one guy or girl... but it is a very specific person, and you can select the class, of course, but it's an interesting character because it's about this family dynamic, and you're paired with your sister, or at least I was. I would imagine if you choose a female character, you would still be paired with your sister, but I'm not entirely certain. I think so. But anyway, and you're dealing with your uncle who sort of sold off all the family wealth, and your mother and all that. It's stuff that you don't often see touched upon in video games, which is pretty exciting to me. And I think it's written very, very well.
But I'm still getting the problem, which is you're telling me a lot of interesting bits and pieces.
And that's sort of, I think,
I'm like,
the knock.
I'm imagining fantasy world with orcs and trolls.
I mean, elves and
whatever, like elves and orcs and trolls, and we're good guys on a quest to save the world.
Well, there's none of that yet. There's no world saving yet. I imagine that comes in later. Like I said, I'm this is a very long game, as you have said. And
we're Knights of the Round Table. Anyway, sorry.
I have to use the pram a lot.
It's more small moments of saving things or helping people so far. And I'm sure things are going to, you know, the S is going to hit the F, as I like to say, at a certain point. You know, things will coalesce and become a little clearer. But right now, it's just going from place to place. And I have to say, my major disappointment with the game, because I honestly don't have a big problem with that. I'm enjoying the small moments enough. My big problem with the game is that the whole world feels smaller. than the first game. And even in the first game, the world didn't feel huge. And a lot of that has to do with that node system that they use, where you kind of go point to point.
Where you look at a big over map and then you pick where you want to go to next. Yes.
Exactly. In this game, they retain that. And the map is a little more abstracted, so it doesn't even really feel like a map. It just feels like this node menu that you're in. And they're not even fat nodes. They're just regular nodes. Anyway, and you backtrack... all the time. You are constantly popping between locations that you've been to before, and you can go to them in daytime or in nighttime, which changes up some certain features of them, but it became a little bit too abstract. It became too, like, I'm just going to the place I need to go for the thing, rather than I'm traveling in this world. You know, it became dealing with maps rather than real locations that I'm invested in.
So just kind of picking up on what you're saying about it being a smaller world and there being less to do. I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about my experience with Fallout New Vegas. I'm really not a huge RPG guy. Fallout's what I like. Most of BioWare stuff, I appreciate it, but it's kind of like the band that everybody else is really into, and you appreciate that everybody's into that band, but you don't really listen to them.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Ooh, that's cold, Garnet. That's cold. But I was thinking about the idea that the world doesn't feel as big, but it's almost like there's a bigger concentration. There's almost a compactness because they give you a higher density of things to do in that world. Do you feel like that's the same thing with this?
Well, you're using more locations more frequently, and you're returning to places over and over and over again. But it'll be the kind of thing where you'll be in a location and you'll come to a named guy who's just sort of hanging out, and you can walk up and talk to him, and he goes, don't want to talk to you or whatever it is. And it's like, well, okay, because I haven't flipped the switch where you become an interesting character in my world yet.
Okay.
But I will be coming back to you, I'm certain. And that's a little annoying. For me, the benchmark is Oblivion. It is Fallout. Those are the kinds of RPGs that I get really excited about because I feel like I'm exploring. You know, I never really feel like I'm exploring in Dragon Age because I'm only going to the place that I need to go to for the thing. And the maps are kind of restricted. And there are, you know, sometimes little side paths you can go down, and at the end of that path there'll be a treasure or something, a chest. But for the most part, I don't ever feel like I discovered anything. You know?
As much as I've talked about it, have you played The Witcher?
No, I really have to. I'm excited about The Witcher
2. Now I play it like an hour or two every week, and like it's like my little game hour. It's like I sneak like an hour or two of The Witcher, and it's
I don't know how awesome. I
The Witcher game hour with Garnet Lee.
It's a game that is really right up my alley, and I don't know how I missed it the first time around.
You should grab it now. Well, you know what? It's good to grab now because number one, you probably have a PC that's enough past its era that you should be able to spec it out no problem, and it's so patched and complete that you don't have to worry about any of the technical hitches.
Yeah,
I
really do want to play that. I absolutely do.
So you're 12 hours in.
Anyway, yeah, I'm 12 hours in. I'm really loving it. I'm going to finish it.
You are?
Yeah, absolutely I will finish it. I loved the first game for all its faults. I loved that story.
Did you do the X-Pack?
The downloadable content?
They had like a big expansion pack, remember, for DAO. I'm trying to think of what the name of it was.
Awakenings.
Awakenings. It was like almost a whole other full campaign, right? It was like a 10 or 12 hour campaign.
If I recall correctly, yes.
I did not. I played a lot of the DLC.
It was an EP for that band.
It was kind of, right?
I played a lot of the initial DLC, the quests that they were putting out right at launch, but I, you know, as is the case, I was on to other things at that point. But I want to talk about the combat a little bit because the combat changed dramatically.
So you said it's very hack and slash.
It's much more console-fied, which is why I'm not so embarrassed about playing it on the 360 this time. And I don't know if the combat is better and the AI is better, or if they just made it easier. You know what I mean? I don't know if my squad mates are better at doing what they do than they were in the first game, or if they just made everything easier so that them being bad at what they do doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? Because in the first game, battles were these extended tactical, pausing the menu all the time, or my dudes were going to die.
Because it was a PC game.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because it was intended to be played the way those of us who played it the right way played it.
Exactly. Well, you could still play it that way on the 360. And that's how I love Baldur's Gate. I love those old, Ultima is my favorite game of all time. So
I can't imagine trying to go through some of the game's signature combats, the original games, without having tactical view. Because you needed to be able to they move everybody around and do all that stuff. And that's the moment of those games. If you like that sort of game play, that's where you're like, this is what I like doing. This is where it's cool.
Protracted, intense, like, oh my God, I got to get to that guy to give him the next orders, and I have to fill out my tactics. Like, all, yes, you know,
those were awesome.
Getting new tactic slots were huge. Like I said, I'm 12 hours in, so I'm still relatively early.
So what's the
early
combat like now in the big fights?
None of that matters. I can basically play the one character of my party that's most fun to play, which for me is the mage. And I have several mages in my party. But I can basically just play that one and have fun doing that, and my other guys will take care of themselves, and nobody will die, and it'll be all right. And maybe it gets harder and more challenging as I progress, but even early on in Origins, that was not the case. Even early on, I was in these intense fights where it's like, oh my God, I better pause and figure out what everybody's doing. And it really is just mash A until your skills are up, and then do a couple of skills that you have, and then when they're on cooldown, mash A, which is less interesting, but definitely more of a third-person action console game. So
this is sort of a dick move, but I can there's a part of me that says, okay, I can get that, that's cool, I can play that game. You know what, I can't play that game from BioWare. I just, like, especially not when this was the last, and we've talked about this before, like, this was the last hook back to the Baldur's Gate games, to that sort of stuff that they were, like, they were the champions of and did so well and kept proving that, hey, we can be really successful making these games, we're really good at it, we know what the hell we're doing. And for them to slide to this, I mean, I understand they want to be popular, they want to make a game that a lot of, if you're making a game, doesn't it make sense that you'd want as many people as possible to enjoy it as could be? And if you're looking at it and say, well, if we build it like this, like, we'll have this core group of people who really, really enjoy it, but there'll be a bunch of people who won't play it. Or we can build it, you know, a little more friendly, and still have a great story, still have all our characters, and people will see the world. There's way more people who will see it. There's way more people who will play it. But
yeah,
I want to be instilled in that core. I still want that core game. Someone needs to make me that game still.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, I would.
I think Witcher 2 is taking care of that for me, which makes me happy.
Well, but combat in Witcher 2 is basically just third person action.
Well, combat in Witcher 2 is all action oriented. However, the development of the character. Well, so tell me about character development. That's something I'd be really interested in. How much character development is there in there?
I love it. It very akin to the first Dragon Age, where instead of, you know, in Origins, you would have these campfire moments where you would go back to your base camp and you could hang out and talk to people.
I had a couple of good campfire moments.
Campfire moment, baby. But in this one, each character in your party has a home that they belong to. And when you return to that home, you can engage them in certain conversations that weren't available elsewhere and find out more about them. And it still has all that friendship system.
When you say home, do you mean like you have a city?
Yeah, it's Kirkwall, I think it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, and that most of the game that I've played thus far, I mean, I've ventured out of that, but a lot of the game involves in and around Kirkwall. I think it's called Kirkwall. So the for instance, one character's home is the bar in that town called the Hanged Man, and so when you're in the Hanged Man, he's in his home, and so you can activate certain dialogue options with him that you wouldn't otherwise. And you still have the friendship stuff. So when you friend people up, there are actual skills that you can put skill points into that weren't available before they were your friend, which is how
That's cool.
Origins was as well. And those are usually much more powerful than their regular skills. So there's lots of that. And I think the characters are interesting. One of the big reasons I chose to play it on the 360 was because I heard that, much like Mass Effect, it would import your save game data. And since I finished Origins on the 360 and have all these moments that I loved, I was all excited about how that would affect the world. Well, I haven't been able to determine 12 hours in. I'm able to determine one damn thing that.
But maybe
it
is happening.
Over.
Maybe it is happening.
I hope, but I have no idea. I mean, there's no. If I can't tell, is it worth it?
I mean, the buzz reports I'm reading are, it sounds like it's kind of marginal. Like, it sounds like it's not as dramatic as what you got with Mass Effect.
Well, certainly not. I mean, you're playing a completely different guy, so that makes more sense, but...
I love how you slid there. You're playing a completely different guy?
Yeah, he's
a completely different guy.
It's
a different
guy, you know?
It's a different guy.
He's got a beard, you know?
Next week, I'm going to be most interested to find out whether you're still chugging along and still as enthusiastic, and whether or not you can tell me what the hell the game is about.
Yeah.
Well, because if you can't tell me what the hell the game is about next week... Then we got a problem.
Well, like, you know, the witch chick from the first game shows up.
Okay.
And Morrigan, like, she says Morrigan's name at one point, like, 5 hours in, and I was like, "Ooh, Morrigan!" But that was it. Was passing reference, and then like at one point, I
so you're talking about Mama?
Yeah, the witch chick that in the first game, I think you had the option to kill her.
Oh yeah,
I did not kill her, so I don't know if that would have changed something because she's alive.
There's a spoiler that goes with that, so I won't do it. But yeah.
I didn't kill her in my game, so okay. I don't know how that... But she's a major character, so I don't know what they would have done. Anyway, but in another point, I looted an item that was the Mumbari dog collar from the first game. So there's a little like reference to the dog from the thing. But other than that, like there's no touchstones.
All right, we're coming back next week to Dragon Age. And hey, maybe next week we'll also come back to Fight Night, since I know you and
yeah,
we want to play some Fight Night.
I'm definitely going to finish Dragon Age 2, definitely.
All right, if you stick around, when we come back on the other side, we still have some Torchlight XBLA. We've got some GDC wrap-up stuff. We got some 3D Super Street Fighter 4 for 3DS. Stick around. We'll be back with all that and more. Hey, Bulletstorm, Killzone 3 coming up, Homefront, a lot of games to choose from, and you know what? Why buy them? You can always rent. It's easy. You just go and sign up on Gamefly.com. We ship them straight to your door. No late fees ever. 7,000 games in stock. Put them on your queue. Get them sent over to you. Jeff Mattis is now laughing because I can read from the script. Go ahead. Tell us about it, brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, rent some games, man. Do it.
Go there to the joystick in the top right-hand corner. Click on that, enter in your code confirmed, and we will give you 2 months for the price of one. So you sign up. It's I think it's like $16, and you'll get 2 months of service on us. Code confirmed. All right, since it is the meme of the moment, we just figured out Dragon Age 2 is the Charlie Sheen game. Right?
Did we?
You said
winning.
It.
It's winning.
It's whacking dudes and winning. That's what you said.
I'm so outside the Charlie Sheen meme loop.
Oh, come on now.
Consider yourself lucky.
You're like, wait, where's your tiger blood, Kanata? Come on.
Inside my tiger, of course.
Well, that's a good place to keep it. What else we got coming up? We still have your comments on Dead Island, which I think is going to spark a little interesting discussion since there was the... You know, break between the trailer and then the actual game that was shown. Did you see the game?
I didn't see the game, but I had a feeling that was going to happen.
All right, we're going to talk about that in the warning. So let's see, what games should we hit next? We were talking RPGs. I don't know, Jeff, how much Torchlight you played?
Not a lot. I mean, I played a lot of the PC version.
I played a shit ton of the PC version. So what's your opinion of the Xbox version? Because I have to say,
it works very well.
I was on the show, and like I've been talking to the Runic Games guys, and they were like convincing me of how good it is. You've already heard me say like, oh yeah, it's going to play really well, because they were convincing me of it. I'm a little fence.
Really?
Yeah, so what character do you play, first of all?
I play a barbarian.
Okay, so it might be better melee.
Probably, yeah. I did not play any ranged, so yeah.
Yeah,
other than he has guns and stuff, so and that worked out fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody has range, but I mean, you're probably more often than not wielding
whacking stuff.
Yeah,
and
so you're gonna go up and smack on them, right?
Yeah.
See, I like the range chick, and the problem that I have is what I was most concerned about, which is how do you hold yourself in place and still aim and fire? So it works pretty well, because what it does is when you start firing your ranged weapon, it pins you to the ground right there, which is great. Because then you can use your movement stick to aim, and it has a nice highlight that pops over the enemies, and that all works really well. But, most of your ranged characters, all of your skills are going to be ranged weapon modifiers. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have, like a through shot or a ricochet shot. And what it doesn't do is let you smoothly go from firing with the X button to firing one of those skill shots without taking your finger off, at which time you start moving... And then firing again.
Interesting.
So I'm trying to see. I think if I train myself, I'll be able to, when I stop firing with my right thumb, take my left thumb off the aiming stick, so I won't move. Mm-hmm. And then when I grab the trigger or whatever that I have the other skills assigned to, it'll just shoot where I was shooting. And then once I start using that, then I can move. You know, I can aim again. Mm-hmm. So that's a little awkward. I think that works really well.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it bodes well for the sequel as well.
Oh, the sequel will be great.
And I think just adding co-op to that game is going to be
fantastic. You know, I love those sort of games. I also had forgotten, and it seems like I played Torchlight a lot, but I've forgotten how much the music in that game is the music from Diablo.
Yeah.
Wow. I should go back. It's like almost the exact same music. It's so atmospheric, too. I love it.
Yeah.
Like the guitar, and you're like, oh, this is awesome.
And it's only $10, right? Or is it more?
15? I believe it is. Yeah. I think so. I mean, it's see, listening to you guys talking about Torchlight and everybody else raving about it, I was off somewhere with something else, but I know everybody's been talking about it on Twitter, so I think it's going to be time for me to take the plunge.
It's oh, so good. It's really good.
Saying it's fantastic.
So, like, yeah. like I am totally nitpicking. It plays, first of all, it looks really, really good.
Yeah.
Like the translation is, yep. is spot on, and it is a perfect lay on the couch and just chill and dungeon crawl. Great looting. Great looting. Like, because, of course, yep. like Diablo guys, like, they, that is what they get right. That's, yeah. I wanted to see Dungeon Siege.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to see Dungeon Siege 3, and I'm sort of...
I saw it at E3 last year, and I got excited about it, but everybody's all negative on it. So I thought it would look cool. I loved the first Dungeon Siege. Second one, I didn't really play, but first one was like, yeah!
Really? See, I didn't like the first one so much.
Really?
And, well, mainly because... Again,
nobody makes those games anymore. Those,
I know.
Those full party, like Ultima used to be, which is
so to the looting subject. I think that the problem I had with the first one was that there was too much loot. There was too much junk loot, and even like the first tier loot was too much. Like someone was sitting back there with an urban spoon, but for like game loot. It's like, oh, I'm going to roll the dice and it's going to, or I'm going to roll the little tumble. You know what Urban Spoon is? Like we roll the little tumblers. Like
yeah.
I thought they were like doing that where it's like, it's a deviant dagger of piercing.
So it's kind of like what we were talking about with EA Sports, but a little more something plugging in.
Right. Yeah. And I realize that even that said, I realize that Torchlight does the same thing,
yeah.
but there's something about the, their ability to convey character, and I don't know, maybe it's through the art, and maybe it's
art is great, and seeing those things on your dude or dudette is very satisfying, especially in that little cartoony way. It's great.
So that's what Dungeon Siege 1 didn't get, and then 2 started to get a little better, and 2 had like a much broader story. 2 is actually a pretty damn good game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 3, I mean, it's going to Obsidian.
I think 2, didn't 2 have, wasn't 2 less a party and more individual
party,
guy?
Yeah, a party, yeah.
Okay.
You also had the mule.
Right,
which is nice because you have the dog or cat. Or well, there's one other animal in the Xbox Live version.
Oh,
it's like a lizard.
Giraffe.
No, yes, it's a giraffe. Oh my god, that would be awesome. It's a muskrat.
Meerkat.
Meerkat.
It's my favorite.
No, it's a snipe.
It's a good one.
A snipe.
Yes.
Is it a liger?
So anyway, that's XBLA. The other game that I played that I was really excited about at GDC was Lord of the Rings War in the North, which while we're on the Ooh. Subject of loot games is by Snowblind, who did all of the Champions of Norrath games, which to me, like next to Diablo, are probably the very best of those high detail, great art, high fantasy loot dungeon crawls. And I came away like really excited for this game.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I talked to a lot of other folks who saw it and the I was surprised actually after the demo that they showed it because it's working, but it's pretty early. Yeah. You know, like
is Lord of the Rings kind of over though? I mean, is it? It's a little. I mean, the Hobbit's coming. We know that, but
well, I think there's like
it's a little tired. It's a bit of a tired
so,
license.
I don't know. I mean, I think they've made some misfires with the license, but the fact that they're coming with like a raw ass like. Violent M-rated like get down in the dirt battle stuff, like I think that's going to be a good hook for them if they
so Jeff,
if they play it,
did you know it's not only uses Tolkien's Lord of the Rings as the world in which to cast the game. It's not the War of the Rings.
Okay.
It's taken from one little part of like the Two Towers where Gandalf or somebody says some line about, if it weren't for how well the war had gone in the North, this wouldn't even matter. The trip to Mordor wouldn't even matter.
Mm.
So that was like the only...
So things are going well in this game.
That's the only allusion to it. Well, you don't know how. I mean, that's how it wound up.
Yeah.
But the whole crux of it is that there was never this story told. So they're going... So you
that's
go into
cool.
the North, and there's three characters, and the three characters are set. And so one of them's a dwarf, and one of them's a ranger, and of course one of them's the, you know, like elven magic slash healer slash buffer debuffer. And it's set to be played co-op, although you can play, you know, with the computer controlling. And the thing that I like about it is that they're sort of bridging this gap between the Torchlight sort of play that they've done so well for so long and the Unreal Engine licensed... I mean, I'm not we got to talk about Hunted, I guess, in the same breath, because I saw Hunted not too long ago, too. Mm-hmm. Like, and Hunted, which is just like, you know, pure action game, yeah, third person, all those, set, you know, skin
basically,
and fantasy.
Gears of War in a fantasy, yeah, setting.
So this doesn't feel like a Gears of War game clothed in a fantasy wrapper, mm-hmm, but it doesn't feel like a point and click or, you know, a looting sort of third person game anymore. They found like this middle ground, and the combat, you know, like, so the look has that I'm in close, everybody's detailed, it looks really cool, and I'm immersed in the world more completely, you know, like the snow's beating against my brow and all that, you know, like you really get that immersion in place. But the combat goes back to I'm swinging my sword and I'm casting my spells and I'm firing, mm-hmm, my arrows, and it doesn't feel like I'm just substituting for lancers and grenades, mm-hmm, which a lot of times it does in, you know, in Hunted. I feel bad to say that because I like those guys. I mean, I like...
And these are like random dudes that you get to name and be your
The three characters are set because it figures very prominently in the three player co-op mechanic that they have. Ah. So each of them has a certain special ability. So for instance, the dwarf, as dwarves in that world do, has the ability to see dwarven runes. Mm-hmm. And so that gives him the ability, for instance, when they're in, you know, mines or passages, he can find hidden dwarven shortcuts and that kind of thing. Whereas the ranger is a tracker. And so the ranger can pick up on like wolf sign or whatever and be able to know, oh, there's a pack of wargs around here, you know, that kind of stuff. So they bring that element into it. And the most fun part of what they were showing, because I have to think about mechanics, because again, it was early. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people fixated on the fact that like there were parts that just weren't working smoothly yet. But
is it a 2011 game or past that?
I don't think they've given a date. Hmm. I'm gonna guess that it's a 2011 game. I think what's interesting to me, and I mean obviously, I've only watched games develop for a long time, is it seems to me like their art is way ahead of where their engine is, hmm, and maybe it's because of what they're trying to do with the engine. I mean, the art's looking good. The engine was working, but there were like some collision problems, and like they have a lot of AI running because they want everybody you're fighting, because now you're in closer, they want everybody you're fighting to behave like when I'm right up in close with you and I'm trading blows with you, it doesn't work.
I don't like
work.
That. I don't like it, when we're up close trading blows.
It doesn't work anymore.
Enjoy that.
Like there's an ability when you're doing a more top-down view for all the enemies you fight to have a crowd mentality. Right, yeah. You can have like a crowd game. And even if it's a crowd game here, when you're in close and the view is up close, if the guy I'm fighting isn't behaving with some tenacity and fighting back with some reasonable amount of aplomb, it's just like, you're like, oh, that's not very cool. Like, but this dude just like something for me to batter.
Usually it just breaks down to the fighter types run up and smack you, the mages stand back and cast spells, and the archers
try. Still happens here, yeah. But you have to decide how you want to break it down. And what's cool, one of the things I really, the signature piece I thought was very good for their, that bodes well for their co-op, is that the way that you fight and build up is through combos, and your combo is team-based. So we can all, as long as we're all fighting, can concentrate our fire on the same guy. And the combo is not based on us powering up, but the effect of the combo of the dude that we're hitting. So let's say we're fighting a big troll. Instead of me trying to go for a 6-hit combo, we're trying to get 6 hits on the troll. Because once we get him to that point, we've weakened, mm-hmm, him down and made him more vulnerable.
That's cool.
So we can tag it up together. Like if I'm rangering, I can sit back, I can use my bow, I can use like my special shots at the right time to get more effect, and we can work on building our power up against that opponent as opposed to me individually building it for me.
Does it seem like that stuff just sort of happens on its own, or does it seem like you can actually plan that and coordinate it?
It didn't happen unless we were calling it out.
Oh, wow.
Because otherwise, cool, there's like all these people fighting, right? And there's all this stuff going on, and like it's really easy to get lost. And it's like, but hey, dude, that mage back there, he's healing people. We got to go get on him. Mm. All right, hold on. I'll transfer my fire. He's like, okay, I'm going to go hit him right now. So you'll start working together to do that. Now, I don't know how much that limits the appeal, because does that mean it's going to work in pickup groups? Mm. And how well is the AI going to be able to contribute to that?
But it's only, what, 4 people in a party?
Three.
Only three,
yeah,
people.
3-player game.
So I think there's less worry about pickup groups,
yeah,
right?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I think this is the sort of game that you'll wind up playing with your friends.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think that sounds awesome. And is it always the same three types, or can you, mm-hmm, sometimes you're, yeah, it is always a three.
It's okay. Set up to be these three archetypal, okay, characters, and it's still, and interestingly enough, even though it's Lord of the Rings, it still has all of Snowblind's signature, like, like you still are looting. Mm-hmm. So it still has all this cool loot, but they've done it all within the Lord of the Rings lore.
Cool.
So they still have and an
mithril
vest
and
mithril vests, all that kind of stuff, and it's all arted up, and it all shows up on your character, and of course you're in closer, so it looks even cooler.
That's great. So I'm excited for that. That sounds great. I mean, I love the co-op experience, and it sounds like it'll be a little bit different than something along the lines of, say, Marvel Ultimate Alliance or something, where it's just a pure beat 'em up, you know, top down mm-hmm. beat 'em up. That this is a little bit more tactical, a little bit more role playing, a little bit more Diablo, I guess.
It seems like they've been spending a lot of time streamlining it. I mean, they announced the game how many years ago? It's been about two years ago,
E3 judges thing, yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like they've just been spending a lot of time, what you're saying about the art and the engine, just kind of perfecting and tweaking. Because I know, you know, kind of keeping an eye on the calendar and where we're going to project it reviews-wise, it's slipped a few times from, like, the calendars. So, you know, I know there's been putting a lot of work into it and polishing and refining
it. I can't tell you from what I saw, it's not before summer.
Oh, yeah, that's what
it's
I'm assuming.
Definitely not before
summer. I'm pretty sure. I have a feeling, I think, I don't have my calendar right in front of me, but if I recall correctly, I think it's late summer right now.
It could be. It could be. I think you could pull the engine together. I mean, if the art assets are there. Did you guys play Hunted at all?
I played it a while back. But
at the Brink event?
Yeah.
Because that's the contrast, right? And I don't know about that game.
I think it could be fun. It's not, I mean, it's just a third person, you know, what, 6-hour action game wrapped in fantasy. And I think it could be fun for what it is. I don't know. A lot of people are way more down on it than I was. I remember Leahy was like, whoa. But I'm not down on it.
So there's a nymph, and she sends your nymph and strapping dude around to find crystals for her in a Gears of War game that's clothed in fantasy trappings.
But it looks pretty.
It does look pretty. I like In Exile. I'll tell you this. The one thing that's kind of cool is that it has that old school hiking all the way back to like the Stonekeep guys of the main quest. I thought this was really interesting. The main quest will like show up on your little pointer arrow and all that kind of stuff. The side quests are completely they don't give you prompts for them. Like there are quests there, like, oh, there's like a rune puzzle here. I need to figure out how to beat it. But there's no quest text that's going to pop up. There's no like explanation. There's no arrow to point you to where the next runestone is.
It's just something you can do.
It's like, wow, there's something I can't get past here. This looks like I need to get 4 runes and put them here someplace. I can go look for them. I can try and find them, but there's not going to be like a, okay, follow the little golden crumb trail.
Do you remember when that's how all friggin' games were? Do you remember when you had to have a pad of paper and a pencil with you when you were playing role-playing games?
So that harkens back to Stonekeep.
And a grid paper, like a notebook paper on a grid so you could make a map for yourself.
I withhold the right now to say that I love this game down the road, because if that part works, because in a demo you don't get really try that out. It's like in the demo you're like pounding down the main course or whatever. If that part worked, that shit would be cool, because I haven't done that in a long time, and it made me stop and think for a minute of like, really, pretty much every modern game that has side quests now, the side quests are all spelled out for you in your quest log, just like every other quest. So it's like, oh, I go into my, like, I finish a quest, I go to my quest log, I click a button, and then it, like, shows up on my mini map, and there's an arrow that points me to it.
Yeah.
It's like, they might as well put a hook through my nose and just drag me there.
I don't know, not to be too cynical about it, but what if the achievements are all linked to the side quests? Then it's kind of spelled out for you, and you have to figure it out.
Are they linked to it?
I have no idea at this point. But I'm just putting out a hypothetical what if. So what if what we're talking about here, about them not really spelling it out, ends up inadvertently being spelled out because of everybody's compulsiveness about collecting achievements?
I don't know. Maybe they don't include. You know what? I think these guys are like, In Exile's a bunch of vets. I mean, these guys have made a couple of games before. I think that they would be savvy enough to recognize that would be a design hiccup, and they just like, well, you know what? To them, honestly, I bet they'd say, if you want to do our side quests, you don't want achievements. We're not going to give you achievements. It's not about achievements. It's about if you want to go explore the world.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, I'm curious with what you're saying, how that's going to shake down. If they indeed do kind of just say, screw it, do whatever you feel like doing.
What else we got in here?
You want to talk about 3DS stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. So I was up there. There was some stuff I checked out for some other long lead things. You know, I really wasn't that jazzed about a lot of the 3DS launch lineup. I mean, I was really wowed with what I saw at E3, and then after that, it's just kind of quieted
down. I can't wait until Billy's back here, because I played a crap ton of Pilot Wings at GDC, waiting for it to get good and be any reason for him to be that excited about it. So, Billy, if you're listening, please explain to me why you're excited about that game.
Burn it. Well, for me, I'd say, you know, it's Super Street Fighter. That's
yeah,
like the
that
game
is
that
awesome.
For me, I'm like, oh, okay.
And the
this
the,
is the
three-quarter view mode is badass.
The one for 3D?
Yeah.
It actually it works really it works well. It's not my preferred mode.
I don't think it's the most efficient mode, but it's so much fun playing that way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I did quite a few rounds with it. I actually went through and like, you know,
because in the 3D when you have that depth, and I don't know if people are aware of what it is, it's that it's as if the camera has moved off of, you know, sort of the
background.
Yeah, off of that sort of
it's like a
proscenium.
It's like a 2.5D kind of plane. Like it turns the camera almost like a over the shoulder kind
of. It's like a quasi Gears of War cam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're in a fighting, you're in a 2D fighting game that's gone 3D. It's like
mind
boggling.
And in 3D you have such depth there, and then when you're doing the coolest moves, it looks so dynamic and interesting. And it's so different from what you're used to for Street Fighter that it's really pops.
Absolutely. Well, I also like what they've done with the touchscreen controls because they've made it. Yeah, so what they've done is when you're playing, you can map out four different moves to the touchscreen. And some people will say, oh, well, that's cheap. All you do is just spam fireball. But there's like a cooling off period. So you actually have to like kind of, you have to be careful about how you use it. And it's just as, I mean, throwing a Hadouken is easy as hell. You know, everybody knows that. That's ingrained in you from 1992. That's not the thing. But it's like, it's cool for when you want to bust out those ridiculously hard combos that you know damn well you're normally not going to be able to do. Or if you're playing on a normal controller and you don't have an arcade stick and all the really cool stuff you want to do with that character, it's not really an option. Or like Zangief's like super humiliation ultra. It's like, all right, fighting. Hit the touchscreen. All right, we're ready. So it's like, it's the entertainment factors there. And it definitely makes it more accessible without it being just somebody being cheap and totally spamming it.
Well, Zangief is a great example because on the 3DS controller, it's so difficult to do his spinning arms thing.
Yeah.
And it's a move you need to use a lot when you play Zangief. And you know, hitting all three punches at the same time is really tough. So mapping that, it would be a useful
use. It makes sense. It's a very functional use of the touchscreen. I feel like it's very well adapted too. You know, it's like, there's a certain amount of graphical polish that went away, but at the same time, the art style feels very, very Street Fighter. It feels like they've done their, my hat's off to them. It feels like they've really done the best they can with adapting it to that medium. And the 3D didn't make me want to, you know, barf all over myself.
I dug it, man. And I contrast that to the other game that I played at that Capcom event, which is the Resident Evil. What is it? Resident Evil what?
Oh, Mercenaries.
Mercenaries?
Oui. Somebody else played that. And that
wasn't me.
Take that game away from me, please.
Why?
It's just brutal. I mean, the controls are frustrating and
it's Resident Evil
awkward controls,
tank control.
It just is on that hand. I did not care for that game. Maybe it's just not for me. But
Mercenaries was never really like I always felt like that was kind of like an extra side dish to everything else. You
and
were
this
getting.
Is now it's the main.
Jeff,
dish.
Was it Dan that I read who had like such a not it's fun experience with the 3D?
Oh, he doesn't. He oftentimes doesn't handle. I think he dug the 3DS though, from what I remember.
Someone I read on, I thought it was Dan. Was like, I can only do this for like 2 minutes. And it makes me sick.
No, I don't think that
maybe
was
it was Roger.
Well, that's another thing I would say about Super Street Fighter as well is the fact that, like, yeah, the 3D looks great and there's a certain amount of depth of field. And I really like what they did with the HUD, where the HUD kind of jumps out and the background separates and the characters are distinguishably on their own. You know, I love how that looks, but at the same time, it's just as great if you turn the sliders off and play it in 2D. It still looks absolutely fantastic.
Agreed. And I really dug messing around with the AR stuff.
Dude, you know that was my jam.
It's so compelling and fun because, I mean, messing with the environment, you know, that shoot game where you have to physically move around the thing that's sitting on
the
table.
Did we not talk about the NGPAR last week?
I don't think so.
We didn't talk about that?
I don't think so.
Oh, dude, that shit was crazy. So at the same time they had the 3DS thing across the hall, they had like the we're going to show you the NGP demo or whatever at GDC, and a lot of people figured, oh well, it'll just be the same presentation that they had in Japan. Mm-hmm. They added one new thing. They showed off their version of what they're doing in AR.
Ooh.
with the NGP. Now, of course, Sony has a pretty good experience with AR stuff. You know, they've done all the iToy stuff.
Right.
They've already done three games now on PSP with the Pets game and
the Invisimals.
Invisimals and they've had
another one. Yeah,
they have a couple other. They have little camera fits on top. So. this time they really go nuts. The first thing they do is they show, remember like 96 PlayStation, they had the T-Rex dinosaur animated walking demo. It was like a video.
Yeah.
They're like, this is how powerful the 3D engine is.
It's Jurassic like this, Park graphics.
This polygonal T-Rex like walking. So this demo was, he showed that for a second, walked down with the NGP, had this like thing the size of a bath towel on the floor in the aisle that was like the dinosaur spawn point.
Yeah.
Held the NGP out and like did a virtual reality dinosaur that like the size of the convention room.
It's epic.
Hanging, like standing like over and like going.
So the NGP comes with a bath towel, confirmed.
Yes, comes with a bath towel. I think it was like a big piece of paper, whatever. But it was super sized. It was dramatic. And it was really, really cool. And the other thing that he did, so that was done off of a generated card, but they're also able to do it with, like, I forget, they have like a buzzword for it. I put it in my story, but it's like normal world translation or something. But they can, the camera can identify real world objects. So he did like he had a copy of Ape Escape, and he pointed the camera at it, and it picked up Ape, you know, the ape with the little flashing helmet.
Yeah.
And it spotted that and then had him like stand up, and he was like dancing around on the cover of the game.
Amazing.
It was really
That's
cool.
Badass.
It was really badass. I thought, wow, all the things like all you have to do is tell the camera what to recognize.
That's rad. Hmm.
So their AR was, AR on NGP was really fucking cool.
That is cool.
I think that busts open a whole new way of playing video games. You know, there's like a really interesting avenue that I think that the industry is going to go down a little bit.
I think
these two handhelds.
That's what they're going to have to do to compete with what's going on right now. I mean, for me, this is the first generation of new handhelds coming up where I feel pretty disinterested. And it's just because the way that my gaming habits have changed. Mm-hmm. My gaming habits have changed with age. And so, you know, when I lived in San Francisco, which is a more transit-friendly, pedestrian-oriented city, you have more time for handheld games.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas living here, I have the choice between sitting on my couch, am I going to play something on my DS or am I going to bust out my console? I'm going to bust out my console. That's just, you know, it's second nature for me. So for me, the sort of bite-sized gaming experiences I take, it's stuff where I might play something in bed if I'm not reading some book or something. And usually that goes to everybody's love or hated game, Angry Birds. Lately, it's just like, okay, cool. I'm going to play something for about 3 minutes while I get ready to doze off. And like,
does anyone really hate Angry Birds?
There's some Angry Bird haters out there.
Like,
I'm not getting
angry,
you know what,
Angry Birds.
Angrier birds.
You know what? I'm just like, I'm going to hit a U-turn and just not go down that road.
Angry Birds.
Just bring it back to. We just bring it back to. They're really. I'm going to be really curious because with 3DS, I mean, I think like Street Fighter 4 looks amazing. I think that. The ARG stuff is what's going to be a big hook for them. And that's what it's going to have to be kind of like their, maybe it's not everything they can hinge it on, but the concept, like they've got to come up with something other than the 2 minute game, because right now everybody's got that on their phones.
Yep, for sure. And of course this today, right now, you might be listening to this standing in line for your iPad 2.
Yeah.
You could well be standing in line for your iPad 2 with a new dual core processor.
Yeah. I'm not getting one, but.
Because you already have one.
I have one, but I would have been happy to get a new one if it had had the high-resolution screen. But they decided not to give me that.
Oh, you're just such a hater. It's going to be months. It's going to be months, maybe even a year. But you won't have to.
I think it's a year. Yeah. I don't buy into the whole six-month thing.
I don't think so either.
I waited a year for this last one. I can wait another year for the next one.
Well, you won't have to wait much longer for us to come back, because we're going to take a little break. And when we come back on the other side, we'll get into the warning. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Weekend Confirmed. So tell me about the creation of Raptor Man, how you made him, and what was cool about him.
Raptor Man's mentor is Batman. Batman. So he can heal and shapeshift.
What was cool about Raptor Man?
Laser beams. Ice, fire, gadgets. Mentalism. Ice, fire, gadgets. Mentalism. Raptor Man's nature, so he can heal and shapeshift.
Raptor Man's nature, so he can heal and shapeshift.
Raptor Man.
Raptor Man. How is Raptor Man doing, by the way? Do we have an update on him?
I think he feels very neglected at this point. Yeah, very neglected.
And
too many games.
And you were telling me you may play some Rift also.
Oh, yes. That's
so
the plan.
Raptor Man may have to go into hibernation.
Raptor Man extinct.
No,
he'll be back.
He'll be back.
When there is trouble in the streets, when you don't know who to turn to,
call Raptor Man.
When bad men haven't evolved.
All right, we have way too much stuff here, but there's some games we didn't get to and some panels we didn't get to. So real quickly, I wanted to say that I got to check out Alice.
Yeah, so did I.
Me and Will Tuttle were playing it. Will was playing. I was like watching over his shoulder. Like I know Will. Like ask him, like, how was it? He's like, oh, it controls the way it's supposed to. Okay, that's pretty much like got that part. American McGee may have a good game again. What do you know?
Bravo.
Did you feel like the first Alice was a good game?
Oh, the first Alice was an awesome game. Did
really?
You not? You didn't like it?
I thought it was a wonderfully conceptualized game, but in practice, did not play well.
It didn't.
There you go.
But it was a wonderfully conceptualized
game. Oh, yeah.
Game.
I mean, yes.
It was like Tim Burton fantasy, and this is the same thing.
Okay.
This one's just a design presentation.
I mean, that's my issue with all of his games is, yeah, I mean, it's a wonderfully well-designed game and imaginative and creative and interesting. But at the end of the day, it's just a third-person action game that probably, well, at least the first one didn't really control very well.
Well, you want to know the worst part? Is the combat in this is all puzzle actuated. Like it's all, okay, I'm fighting this enemy. To fight this enemy, I have to use this weapon to weaken them and expose their weak spot. And then I use this other weapon to attack their weak spot. So for instance, back at TGS, you were fighting these teapots and you had to use your pepper mill and it would like blind them. And then once they were blinded, you switched to your dagger and daggered their eye out.
Yeah.
In this latest one, it was like you were fighting these armored card guards and you used the teapot, which would like fires this blob that was it was really weird. It was like a green tea blob. I'm like, okay, that's really kind of disgusting. And then they would like be like stunned for a minute, and then you snuck up on them and literally stuck their glowing weak spot with your knife. Or there was something else you were sick on. I forget what that was, but still, so hyperbole turned off. It's not going to be a great game, but it's going to be a really fun game that if you like that imaginative, like if you like getting lost in that imaginative world, if you like that, like, wow, this is like crazy awesome acid trip visuals with like cool funky characters and bizarre situations, it'll still do all that, and it's playable enough that you'll play the game and have fun with it, and that won't get in the way.
But don't you think that it would be much more exciting to have a creator of his imagination and his design sensibilities doing something more interesting than just making a hack and slash third person action game, like maybe David Cage has done? Segue.
That is a nice segue. Although I was going to just quickly hop in before we go to segue and just say, you just made me think though. Old coworker of mine, we had a discussion once. He said, if only we could get Peter Molyneux's ideas and Sid Meier's execution, it'd be the perfect game. I always liked that quote. Segue. Heavy Rain. I'm playing it again. Like, that's my plan. When I
thought
get through,
Cage told you not to do that.
Cage might have told me not to, but
to play my game once.
I mean, there's all kinds of dynamics. I mean, let's face it. Like, everybody wants that perfect crime trophy where you play it. You get rewarded for playing it the worst way possible where everybody dies. Everybody dies, you still get a trophy.
I didn't know that.
That's the perfect crime. So, yeah, we were talking about GDC stuff, you know. Garnet really loved the NGP panel. David Cage gave a breakdown of story and Heavy Rain, in which he talked about, you know, how they made his buzzword interactive drama, and also talking about how they created an emotional roller coaster and how he feels like, you know, how games have kind of squandered that opportunity in some ways, and there's more room for growth. I probably shouldn't take him too much out of context, but basically saying that, you know, in Hollywood, they create, part of why certain films will succeed is because they create characters that you can relate to in some way, whereas games, kind of a lot of the time, your protagonist is kind of a hollow shell and you have to relate to him because you control him, but you don't feel emotionally connected. And I thought it was interesting because that's how he kind of lashed back out at people who, you know, that criticize the fact that you start the game off brushing your teeth and drinking orange juice. And they're like, oh, that's stupid. I can go do that any day. And he said, yeah, if we had, spoiler alert, Ethan do something really terrible to himself, cutting his finger off, for example, Had we had him cut his finger off at the beginning of the game, you wouldn't have cared. But it's the fact that you showed him in his everyday activities and these basic things were kind of a tutorial for how it worked, and he'd lost his son and he'd been through all this, you cared. And so by creating these scenarios through gameplay and then tying that into the story, that's how you get this kind of emotional, these highs and lows that we've created in the game. And it, you know, it was just kind of one of those moments. I feel like so many people in the crowd were like, yeah, let's go play it again.
It's funny. I'm like drawing a parallel like to I'm reading The Time Traveler's Wife right now. I don't know if you
ever... I love that book. It's... Don't watch the movie, but I love that book.
Oh, is the movie bad?
The movie's not good.
I've heard the movie is not good.
The book's awesome.
It destroyed me. It absolutely destroyed me.
And I was like, and it's probably because I'm reading that right now that I'm drawing the parallels in my mind to the way they introduce the characters of Henry and Claire and the sort of character and the sort of the things that they do together early in the book before building up to like, I'm at the end. Like, I just like had something horrible happen last night. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. And the impact of it, because you can connect the dots and you know the personalities and you know all the characters involved and you know how everyone would have responded because you've built a relationship with them.
Yeah.
And you're right. We don't have games that really do that. And David was talking about that at Gamescom like 2 years ago. So, I mean, that obviously was something he was super committed to.
Absolutely.
And I imagine they fought him on it.
Well, I mean, it's also when he kind of this is what I love about GDC is, though, it's ultimately all the stuff that they talk about that everybody kind of cynically in the process writes off and goes, oh, that's marketing jargon or this or that, to watch them kind of like pull back the curtain and show how they did it and whatnot. So what he talked about was he let out a diagram. So case in point, that scene where Shelby goes into the convenience store and the robber is there. And he talked about how that branch, and he actually showed a diagram. I think I took a picture of it, but it was very blurry. But he showed a diagram of breaking down, okay, here's every possible scenario that you could have done here, and here are the four possible outcomes that you could have had. Now, for every single step of this process and every scene and all this branching out that we can do because we can bend the medium in a way that movies can't, we have to do dialogue, we have to do animation, we have to write everything for all these possible scenarios. So it's just like the complexities of the process are just like, it was amazing to see it all laid bare.
I saw Guillermo del Toro do a talk, and he's working on Insane, and he's really excited about working in interactive media and as a storytelling device. And the quote that he said about making games is that it's like playing chess against someone that is going to do all their moves in like 6 weeks. You know, you have to play, do all the moves you're going to do against every possible permutation that they could do when they eventually play chess against you.
That's kind of a cool thought.
That's a great quote.
So having seen that, then let me ask you an extreme opposite end application, how you think it would apply.
Okay.
Would you want to start Gears of War 3 with Dom drinking orange juice and brushing his teeth?
Dom doesn't drink orange juice.
But I think contextually, I mean,
Dom just drinks fear. And tiger's blood.
No. I don't think it's contextually. I don't think it fits in that universe.
Okay,
is the thing.
Something analogous to whatever it might be.
But I think it's just trying to create that emotional connection. I mean, like, that's what I feel like the purpose of Heavy Rain is trying to create this almost kind of, I don't want to say realistic, but more realistic setting, whereas Gears has its kind of, Gears occupies that canon of sort of like this fantasy, sci-fi grittiness. Like, I feel like Dom drinking orange juice or whatever it would be to kind of establish Dom doesn't feel as natural in the context of a game in which you're basically picking up weapons and curb stomping mutants.
But I think this is exactly what we were talking about last week with regard to Dead Island, in the sense of, you know, that the trailer for Dead Island represented an emotional connection to characters in a situation that is very video gamey, but in the moments of that trailer, that very short trailer, I am completely in that experience with those people and I care for them. And I think that is something that, and then that juxtaposed with the reality of what that game seems to be, where it is much more that empty vessel that Sterling was talking about, or that Cage was talking about.
Yeah.
Where it is, it's just an empty vessel that I'm role playing and getting cool kills and all that stuff. But when we get to the point where we do feel something for these people, and it doesn't have to be just seeing him in a normal life or drinking orange juice with them, there's a way to create storytelling where I'm emotionally connected as much as I am viscerally connected. I think that's possible, and it's where the industry needs to go.
Speaking about the Dead Island trailer, Ridley Saria said to us, "I don't think Dead Island was hurt by that trailer. If anything, it was hurt by a bunch of fanboys who let themselves get wowed by a cinematic trailer that clearly contained no gameplay. Come on, people, get some perspective when you watch these things."
I don't think any of us didn't have perspective that it was a cinematic trailer. We all were hoping, or at least I will speak for myself, I was hoping that the sentiment expressed was representative of the sentiment they were going for in the final game.
I personally just thought, this is a pretty awesome trailer. That's it. I judged it on its merits.
Expectations are a funny thing, though, because here we're like, so Dead Island somewhere in between, because we're talking about Gears. And I threw that to Sterling, and as he's talking about it, he says, well, you know, it doesn't seem right for Dom to have, like, an orange juice and toothbrush moment at the beginning of the game, because he's going to go curb stomp mutants.
Well, it's just mechanically they don't really set you up for it. You know, it's like you...
Maybe it's because we just haven't done it very often. I think that actually,
right,
in the right context, if I gave a shit about Dom...
Ripley drinks orange juice and has human moments, right? Right? Before she starts... kicking the shit out of some aliens Aliens.
Of course she does, but that also kind of goes back to what Cage was also saying about the fact that he felt like games are limited by the fact you can only do 10 things. It's like you can jump, you can shoot, you can move in this many directions, but there's only so many things you can do. Whereas the way they designed Heavy Rain was for you to have a variety of context-sensitive moments. And it's all because the way they designed it, the way it plays, you can do so much more in that game. Because it's all prompts. It's how they prompt you to do something. Somebody could argue on the same token, yeah, it's just a bunch of prompts. That's not really kind of limited in its own way. But it feels like they can meld that context into whatever they want to do. Whereas Gears, it's just like... trigger. See, like left trigger, aim, fire.
That's why Duke Nukem is pushing the medium forward, because it adds an 11th thing. Urination.
Oh, snap.
Boom.
It's funny, talking about aliens, I was thinking, well, we already knew Ridley, but there are a lot of people who didn't, and they have that, you know, the beginning where she's like laying in bed, and of course they have like the gross out scene, but like most of like the beginning of that movie is like her laying in the bed, and then Mad About You dude comes and like what's his name?
Paul Reiser.
Yeah, like, but they like have all that setup where they, like, she's like revisioning all that stuff, and all of that happened like the first 20 minutes before the shit hits the fan.
Yeah,
is reestablishing that link with her character. And I think it would be pretty cool if they did something like that, and if someone tried to do that in an action game.
I mean, the problem is you juxtapose that with what Iwata said on stage, which is you got to get people in the first 10 minutes. You gotta give them what the game whole entire game is in the first 10 minutes. It's like, well, you have these two competing philosophies that are at odds with one another because you have our games, and you need to make the whole game bite size in the sense of knowing what it is all in one moment, or is it a narrative experience that can evolve and change, and you can get invested, and then, you know,
I think there's nuances to it. I think that, like, when I think of a game that did it really well, like, I loved Assassin's Creed 2. And I think Assassin's Creed 2, like, the way it set everything up, it gave you, I mean, there are elements where it kind of, it felt like it could have, in ways, it delved into cliche. It was like, okay, obviously Ezio is going to be pissed off. Obviously something terrible is going to happen. And obviously this is what's going to motivate him. But at the same time, the way that they linked it and the way that they kind of laid it out within the story, it made you care about going and getting down to it and shanking dudes in the throat. Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to get this motherfucker. Like, they did a great job with that, in my opinion. I think there's a balance between, you know, how you can do it where it's fun for the sake of fun versus also, you know, getting the player engaged. They'll continue to come back instead of it just being about, this is fun, I want to play it some more.
But, yeah,
like, I care about what's going on, and it's really fun and badass. I want to come back.
Well,
to
one
it.
Of the things I think for a lot of games that aren't Heavy Rain, because the way Heavy Rain was set up to be almost an interactive piece of fiction, is you don't want to start the game off and not have the player doing something with the controller, or doing something with it, you know, having a involved interaction with the game for a prolonged period.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know about the whole 10-minute thing, but like, I can guarantee you that you don't want, you know, one of those Metal Gear Solid length videos to start the beginning of a game simply to establish character. Hmm. But then how do you do that? I mean, I look at some of the games we've seen lately, especially in first-person shooters, and there's absolutely no reason you couldn't have a little bit, we're on the cusp of having enough interactive environment, enough interactive characters and AIs and objects and people and places in a world, that there's no reason you couldn't literally start off walking around whatever environment you're going to be in without having to have guns firing and be engaged enough and be interested in it enough that you are in the place.
Yeah.
You know, like we're close.
Absolutely.
We might not be right there yet. We're really close. I mean,
absolutely. I mean, Half-Life 2.
Homefront tries in a couple of spots, and it gets really close.
But think of how Half-Life 2 starts.
Oh, and Half-Life yeah. 2 up the...
Right? And then that chase sequence across the rooftops is one of the greatest moments in a first-person shooter I have ever experienced, and I didn't have a gun. Yeah. I was just running for my life, and felt in that experience. And,
it's true.
You know? And it was a first-person shooter, but I didn't have a gun.
But then I also think about that, also flipping it on its head, a recent game that kind of put me in the opposite on the opposite foot, the beginning of Bulletstorm.
Oh, the beginning of Bulletstorm is awful.
I just thought to myself, why do I want to shoot this person? And so literally, I sat back. It kind of reminds me of when I played No Russian. I decided that I was going to, when I played Modern Warfare 2, I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to do No Russian, and I'm not going to fire a single shot. Well, and I was like, going to go through, and I was like, I'm not going to fire at anybody. And they make it such a pain in the ass that you just get frustrated. And you're like, okay, screw this. I'm just going to start shooting people because I have nothing. Like, I don't want to spend 45 minutes trying to prove a point here when I'm playing this game and going against it. And Bulletstorm kind of just gave me that moment where they're like, shoot the bottle off the guy's head. And I'm like, you haven't given me enough context to be hateful enough towards this person to potentially blow their brains out, you know? And it just...
Bulletstorm's a weird proposition. Did you see my tweet the other day?
No.
It was Amazon Gold Box deal of Dale on...
Oh, right. It's 20 bucks
on
off.
On Monday or whatever. It was like 40 bucks. And for whatever reason, I guess, you know, like we only got the one review copy, so there's not one floating around. And I was like... I kept clicking on the page and going to it. You know what? I didn't buy it at the end because I was like, you know what? There's other stuff that I'm like way more pulled to, and all things considered, as much as there was an appeal to the just goofy, fun, pretty, shoot people skill shot thing, I was like, you know what? I played a lot of shooters lately. I've enjoyed a lot of shooters, and I just don't know that I'm going to get much more out of this than...
You want me to lend you my copy?
It is worth... You know what? I have to say, it starts off terribly, sure. But once you get past...
I mean, do you want to talk about it? Because I really have no context to talk about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's, as I said on the show, I feel like it's the most fun I've had in a first-person shooter in a long time. And there's lots of things, and I'm conflicted about it in the ways that John was kind of mentioning last week. But I had so much fun with the mechanic of the game.
See, and I get that from the demos, but how weird is it? Like here's how weirdly torn I am, and God knows I have a strange mental makeup in the first place, but I wound up just... Instead, like, usually, like, come on, it's like 40 bucks, brand new release. I'm like, why did I die? Like, I have Amazon Prime. I could have clicked the button. It would have been there in 2 days.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I was just like,
It's, you know what? It's a weird one because there's, like, when I started playing it, and I was very vocal on Twitter, I was like, I feel like I've, like, I played the demo. I was like, I feel like I've lost about as many brain cells as huffing Glade. And then I haven't
huffed much Glade. Does it work well?
I don't know. I'm just like the analogy. But, you know, as I played it, it was like...
smell nice.
And I kept nicknaming it. Like, you smell good. Me's lose brain, but I smell good. You know, my nickname after E3, I kept calling it Ow My Balls, the shooter. I just felt like it was like so dumbed down, and it was so just like
I think that's,
this is what it's boiled
down to.
Dude,
you know what? If that game had an Idiocracy license, I might have actually gotten it.
But that's like the surface level, and then when you get down to it, past all the nonstop dick jokes that would make like, you know, 15-year-old Sterling think it was the greatest thing ever. Like older Sterling's like, yeah, but you know, mechanically it's sound.
Oh, I know
that.
It's
like a well done shooter.
I know that part.
I don't even think it's a well done shooter. I think it just does something in its own way that creates this playground that is an experience that I've never had quite like that in a shooter. And I think that it also becomes self aware at a certain point in meta, and that's fun. The dick jokes are tiresome at first, but it gets smart about it. It gets hip to its own jive.
Smart dick jokes.
Well, smart about how ridiculous it is. You know?
And that's I have to get to that point where I'm playing it. Like,
yeah,
right now,
I'm still
at the point where the dick jokes are just like, oh man, really? Really? But I know other people have said, no, it starts to get self-referential and it realizes how ridiculously...
And clever. There's
is.
A cleverness to it where the writing actually becomes...
Oh, come on. Hold on then.
It's clever.
How do you feel about this when you play in front of your wife? Because the big thing last week was John said that, you know, he felt like he had to apologize to his wife when he was playing the game. Because
I totally get that.
So here's what's weird. Bulletstorm is the kind of game, I don't know if I'd play it in front of my wife, but at the same time, I had no qualms about playing Mad World in front of her.
Well, it's the same. I mean, that's the
I think
same
it's,
thing.
But you know what? I think it's just like, I think it's perspective. I think she can tolerate artsy fartsy Japanese ultra violence better than she can tolerate a bunch of dick jokes and kicking it.
All right, well, then
let
me bring the audience in here first. Bodag said, I find it kind of interesting that John Davison feels the need to apologize to his wife when he's playing Bulletstorm because it uses terms like dick tits. I mean, never mind the fact that you're a one person single-handedly shooting thousands of mutants and enemies and still managing to survive to save the day. Actually, that's not fair. You do have the help of your trusty sidekicks. To me, the entire game is juvenile and in some way designed for 14-year-olds, but that doesn't mean I don't love it. It also makes it easier for me to forgive games like Bulletstorm and enjoy them for what they are, fun. Camp Kusagi had a raises then the bigger question about being embarrassed in games and says, the only game I've ever been embarrassed to be seen playing was No More Heroes 2. On account of the completely unnecessary fan service shots of Sophie and pretty much every other female character along the way. Without a doubt, the game was executed with enough style that Suda51 was clearly in on the joke. Fat load of good that does me when my significant other walks in the room to see a cutscene in which a horde of perky cheerleaders are bouncing around in uniforms that expose the undersides of their breasts.
The funny part was that makes me think, well, I wonder if she walked in on playing Bayonetta then. Because this was something when Bayonetta came out, right around the time that No More Heroes came out, I felt really, like, uncomfortable playing Bayonetta at some point. So I was just like, I feel like a leering perv. Even though I'm not necessarily a leering perv, the game is basically like, nope, you're an accomplice.
What kind of perv are you? Not a leering one.
Oh, man, I need to take one of those online quizzes. What kind of perv are you?
I should have included, actually, Bayonetta came up in the conversation right after this. So just to interject, I wish I had the name of the commenter, but basically the comment came about Bayonetta was that... there was an assertion, if I can put this the right way, that instead of being a sex object that was being exploited, e.g., Sophie jumping around and showing off her boobs,
she's in full control of her sexuality.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that argument as well. I see that, you know, there's some relevance to it. It's kind of like, and I have friends who've straight out like. That have written and said, you know what, I'm a woman who that's plays like, games, and I'm not bothered by Bayonetta because she's in control of that. And it's like, all right, cool. You know, you got
like the whole stripper argument. It's like,
but it's like, you know what, cares. They have, in a way, they have more say on that because they deal with shit I don't ever have to deal with as a woman. So it's like, all right, cool. If you're not bothered with it, that's fine. I felt kind of weird.
I guess I'm fortunate in the sense that my girlfriend's been quoting Bulletstorm for weeks afterwards because she thinks it's hilarious. But, I totally get this, and it really is just a mentality that's sort of base, and I don't think it helps change the general perception of video gaming as being a preoccupation of man children. But I have to say that if you listen to the entirety of Bulletstorm, it is clever. It does get to a place of having some.
I'm gonna leave the audience to writing. Debate that with you in the comments this
sure.
week.
I'm gonna have to actually go in when I have some spare time and try to finish it off, just to see how self-referentially, like, yep, we made out my balls the shooter. They are.
All right, I have two options for you guys to wrap this segment up. We can either talk cross-platform games versus the real game, or Cliffy B's thing about no space for the middle range of games. Which one do you want? Quick.
I think someone pick. The Cliffy B thing.
All right, so the Cliffy B thing is brought up by, and Cole Robinson will pull you to next week because next week is episode 52, and it's going to be all listener submitted.
Oh, look
that's
at that.
That's my decision today. We're going to do all listener submitted stuff because we haven't done one in a long time. And I asked today on Twitter, and like it blew up, so I had tons of stuff. So, Cole, great. We're saving you for next week. Here's the deal. I always do this wrong, so I'm going to get it right this time. Arch Vile said, brought up this thing from Cliffy B. He said, here's Cliffy at his panel. He says, I'm going to go on record and say that I believe the middle class game is dead. It needs to be either an event, movie, day one, company field trip, Battlefield LA, We're There, Avatar, We're There, the other guy starring Will Wright and Marky Mark. Now I'll fucking rent that. I really don't care, right? Or it has to be an indie film, Black Swan. I'll go see that. I'll go to the Rialto and I'll see the AAA IMAX movie. The middle one is just gone. And I think the same thing has happened to games.
So basically saying that it either has to be indie, hip, limbo, re-limbo, re-braid, re-you know, what have you.
Or there's no space in the middle, and actually, As much as his reputation may precede him in other realms, Jim Sterling wrote a pretty strong response to this about the lack of flexible pricing, about the dogmatic approach of publishers to trying to jam everything into the same window, to always wanting to go head-to-head with each other, and to always wanting to be $60. For instance, he brought up Singularity. I thought Singularity is a great game. Was it a $60 game? No. But at $40, it might have been a hit. We brought up Deadly Premonition. That was a $20 game and gathered a ton of momentum because it was a $20 game. There's Majin from Konami, which became, you know, right before they launched it, they took it down to $40. I don't know how it did, but at $40, it was a much better proposition than it was at $60.
Oh, and Slave dropped price really fast, too.
So there you go.
Yeah, well done game.
I'm not on board with Cliffy's analogy to films because I don't think it works as well there, but we're not on a film podcast, so the idea of the middle ground game I think is a tricky one, because if Singularity did come out at $40, I feel like there's a perception that there's an admittance of it having less
of it sucking. No, you're right. So then how do we get the audience over that? Because that's dumb also. It's really dumb also. Stupid that you would say, well, you know what? We want middle price games. We want to pay $60. I don't want to pay $60 for Singularity, but if you put $40 on it, I'm going to think it's a turd.
Right.
Well, you know what? I mean, that's what, if you can pull it off amidst everything with your production schedule, a solid demo and a campaign where we're like, you know what? This is going to be a $40 game. This is going to be a $50 game, but we're going to give you like a badass demo. And like, I think there are ways to sidestep it. I think it just depends on what's going on with the publisher and what's going on with their marketing team and how you spread the word out on that kind of thing. Because I think it's possible. What I find interesting though also about Cliffy's quote is, so he said middle class game. I missed the panel. That to me doesn't even make me think about movies. That just feels loaded with everything that's going on politically right now.
I think that's just a semantics thing.
It is semantics. No, it is. It's just kind of like, wow, like that's like, that may be more loaded than you intentionally meant it. You know, I'm not going to necessarily go on a political rant, but it's like, as I think of him talking about middle class game and I think about all the stuff I read every day where everybody talks about like, oh, the middle class is shrinking. It's like, interesting. That's even getting into our gaming stuff. But I think there is room for it. I mean, I don't know what the budgets are right offhand, but you have to think that like all these licensed games that come out every single year, lockstep with whatever game is coming out. I don't know that they have like mind-blowing AAA budgets. I mean, you look at like a lot of the stuff, how they play. Maybe it's licensing fees, but when you've got to grind a game out pretty quickly, I can't imagine that you have a Gears of War budget, but I would imagine you have a hell of a lot more money than a Braid budget.
Yeah.
So I think there is some middle ground, but I think there's, yeah. And I do agree with what Jim Sterling was saying about the idea that like, you know, the $60 game. I think that we're reaching the death of the $60 game in some ways. And I said that in the most recent EGM. I wrote a whole column where I was like, you know what? What happens is it's almost like you have your premiere, where it's $60, and then a month or two later, because of big box retailers and the way they're out competing each other, and Amazon's getting their slice in there, games are kind of like, it's almost like the pricing is starting to regulate itself if you're savvy enough and you pay enough attention that like you really don't have to pay $60 anymore patient.
I completely disagree. I think that it's almost like if there's not a $70, $80 Legendary Edition collector's set, then it's not.
Pendulum swings that way as well, doesn't it?
It's not a game worth paying attention to.
So you're saying that's like the herald of this is a big game.
Exactly.
So it's just a
$60 boxed release.
Oh my God.
Do you think it's pedestrian?
Do you think there's almost a diversity where we can have more than just one way or the other? Do you think there's room for the people who want the basic game, but then the people who want the cat helmet? Like, I think there's room for everybody.
The $60 game is going to dwindle argument, I completely buy into. I mean, look, like, we all are understanding of the financial commitment it takes from the publisher, from the developer, and then the roll of the dice thing, and there's only a limited number, and there only need to be a limited number of them anyway, because there's so much content that goes into a $60 game. There are only so many of those you can play in a year anyway. So let's find out if we can have that middle ground game. Let's find out, like, let's make a great shooter that's a 6 to 8 hour single player experience, which is like, that's a lot of work. But instead of saying, okay, we're making a $60 game, so we also have to bring in a multiplayer team and build multiplayer levels and have a multiplayer, don't. It's going to be a $40 game. It's going to have a great single player experience. It's going to be fantastic. build in some player investment tools, bring in some stuff that makes me want to keep the game or play it again, have some opportunities for DLC.
Well, that's what I was going to say, to be cynical about it, and then you end up making more off of the DLC if everybody's devoted to your game anyway.
Exactly. Do all those things that make it a great game and make it the right space instead of saying, well, the model is for a $60 game that's a shooter, I need to have this, 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 and this, and this. No, make a different game. Do something different. Think outside of it. We got to, because we can't just sit around and have 200-man teams staffed up every you know, 18 months to make a game that may or may not hit at $60.
But well, what about Mark's old axiom that I co-opted from him years ago, where he said, AAA or I don't play? You know, there. I think there's a lot of that.
Why couldn't these middle-level games be AAA?
Well, if they're making what they consider to be AAA, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, because obviously I want to pay less for games and I'm an advocate for the consumer. But if in their heads what they're making is a AAA game, why not charge commensurate to what the experience that they think?
Because I'm not going to put as much content in the box. I'm not going to employ as big a team. I'm not going to have as many. I'm not going for everything. I'm not going for the kitchen sink.
Well, isn't
not
that just what that, AAA means?
But then also,
that's a great question. Is that what AAA means?
I think that's the connotation, right? That AAA means it is the best of the best. You're getting what you're getting everything you want. You're
if
getting
Reach,
the
if
top
Reach,
of the line.
If Reach didn't have multiplayer, would it still be AAA?
That is a great question. If they put out Reach, a Halo game with only a single player campaign, would there not be a call for the end of the world?
Now you change the question.
Right, but it's an interesting question.
Would it be a AAA game?
If it was exactly what Reach is, but it was only single player,
yes.
In my opinion, because I don't really play Halo multiplayer, but I think you would get a lot of people disagreeing.
I'm just asking for your opinion.
I think that would be a AAA game.
I think it'd be a AAA game too.
But I don't think you get a lot of people who disagree with you.
You could say that, but then you also ask the question, because I was thinking about what you're saying about what defines a $60 game or a AAA game. You also have to ask, with everything that people put into it and all the man hours and whatnot, is it worth charging $60 for a game and losing your ass, or is it worth charging a little bit less and building the audience and pushing it out there and getting evangelists who are interested and engaged in your game and it costs
because
less?
Because the flip side of what you're talking about, Garnet, is Battlefield.
Yeah.
Because Battlefield is the multiplayer only, and then they went, we can't just put out a game that's multiplayer only. It's not AAA. It's not on the same, we're not on the same playing field.
So Battlefield 3 is not AAA?
No, but Battlefield 3 has a single player, is what I'm saying. Is that it's not just that.
Wait, so you don't think the other Battlefield games were AAA games then?
I'm saying that clearly somebody...
Oh, I agree. No, that's what I'm saying, is the publisher mentality is rooted in this. Here is the formula for AAA $60 game. We must follow this.
Right. I think there is a perception that the Team Fortresses of the world and the Battlefields of the world aren't in the same league as all-in-one single-player, multiplayer, the Call of Duties. I think there's that perception. I could be wrong about that.
I don't
know.
I think Team Fortress is strong enough that it's its own entity.
30 fucking minutes in and we get to the good part now?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not diminishing Team Fortress or Battlefield. I think they're both very strong games, and they have huge followings. But I guess you can't help but call them AAA. They are top of the line products.
I
mean, there's the amount of design.
I would absolutely call them AAA products.
There's the design. There's the craftsmanship.
Fucking Portal.
To go into it. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, see, now Portal is a completely different beast, because if you're talking about Portal 1. If Portal 1 was released on its own, which it was not,
At first.
But would it have been the hit that it is if it was released? Because there would not have been the perception. You know, I think ultimately the irony is that it carried Orange Box more than the other stuff in the Orange Box.
Big Brother Valve would have made sure that it would have gotten the buzz it needed.
All right, you guys out there listening, there's the question. What the hell makes a AAA game for you? Is it a price tag? Is it a content package? Is it a polish and caliber? Is it a characterization? Is it a narrative? You tell us on the forums at shacknews.com.
Also, answer the Halo question, because I think that's very interesting.
Also, there you go. Also,
hey, you know what? Let's just also throw it out there. Is it me, or 6 years ago, did the people buying limited edition games give us the birth of the $60 game?
Excellent question. Coming right now, we have the featured music. This is Spirit from Tabernacle MCs.
Yes, you are now rocking with the Bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the Bless. Yes, You are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless.
Oh yeah, they got the spirit up in here. These ladies in here choosing and these fellas in here boozing. Oh yeah, they got the spirit up in here. We blowing on that wall. Hey, trippin' since all past that law. Oh, I got the spirit in me. Toasted with some bras, got the spirit in me. Sipping holy water, got the spirit in
me. Deacon Dutch, Texas. Pushed up, pumped up, spirit turned up. West up, chest up, run up, get messed up. See from seven crown, seven up. Tumble naturals on that ass, nigga, pay up. On the up and ups, my uproar will undo your booze. Up, do what it is, what it do. What up, I'm ill as fuck, I'm being up front. Cavalli suits, we grown up, lobster and scam feet up. Throw up your hood, bang, church, blackbird. Inglewood, stand up, dubs up like you ain't stirred. Update your catalog, tweet your upkeep, and upshift to upbeat, or get up a cut. You ain't shot in the sheet, you just broken upset. Fading an uphill battle, you fucking with a vet. Big up TMZ, backbone of the church. The sign of that, I'm blowing you up, and that's my word.
Oh yeah, they got the spirit up in here. These ladies in here choosing, and these fellas in here boozing. Oh yeah, they got the spirit up in here. We blowing on that raw. Hey, we tripping since all the past that law. Oh, I got the spirit in me. Posted with some bras, got the spirit in me. Sipping holy water, got the spirit in me. Burning that burning. Push got the spirit in.
Yes, you are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless.
I got the spirit, got the speaking in tongues. Patron in my belly, Kush in my lungs. Girl I'm talking to got an earring in her tongue. A big fat ass, a no good man in the sun. It ain't nothing, mama, go ahead and order something. Smoke the deacon over here, twisting something. Finish the bottle, now she talking about sucking something. I got a girl, and I'm just out here headhunting. Girl, you something, the way you packed in them jeans. The way you move, I wanna beat it like a tambourine. Let's shake the spot, get a room, and go do our thing. Asshole naked, but she still want her wedding ring. Bottle service with all the amenities. VIP shaking hands with my frenemies. All these Jews got these goons with their eyes on me. All these broads in here, you fools. Watching me.
Yes, you are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless. Yes, you are now rocking with the bless.
Oh yeah, they got the spirit up in here. These ladies in here choosing and these fellas in here boozing. Oh yeah, they got the spirit up in here. We blowing on that raw. Hey, we tripping since all the past that law. Oh, I got the spirit in me. Toasted with some bras, got the spirit in me. Sipping holy water, got the spirit in me. Burning that burning push, got the spirit in me.
Dave, I think that was probably a flanger right there, wasn't it? On the Tabernacle MCs with Spirit.
Not enough badass tabernacles.
I know. Well, get your ball and tackle set for Tabernacles and Spirit. Anyway, you know where to get a hold of us on Facebook, Shack News, or SoundCloud to submit your tracks. We are actively looking for more music to bring in because, you know, we want more tunes.
Tunes.
More tunes for the music segment. So now I guess we're going to lay down our own tunes. Jeffrey.
Start it up, people.
Well, I thought you were going to start.
Oh, I'm going to start it up?
You had the.
Oh, are we going to do the. He's doing the snaps.
I'm snapping. Come on, before my fingers wear out.
Dip, 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 dip news.
It's news.
Time for news.
It's the time
news. For news. The it's news. Time for news.
Wow.
That was something. That happened.
That was something. You didn't sing your falsetto over the top.
I didn't. You guys went to that area, so I stayed at the bottom.
It's time for the news. There you go.
Wow.
There you go. Hey, remember Rebellion Games, who did Aliens vs. Predator and were at one point in time like in all sorts of trouble and are now making Facebook games? Do you know that about them?
No.
You know who I'm talking about? Aliens vs. Predators, those guys?
Oh, yes.
But
I didn't know they were making Facebook games.
Neither did I. As a matter of fact, they already launched their first one. It was the Evil Genius Facebook game, which is based off of an awesome game. And by the way, I wish
PC game.
Yeah, it was a great PC game. I actually just wish that someone would make a new Evil Genius. So I'm curious how far this would go and where it could go. Co-founder Jason Kingsley said that the development of that game, Evil Genius, for Facebook has given them an appetite to look at other opportunities in the area. One thing's become increasingly clear over the last few years is that gamers can't be defined as just people who own consoles. People who use social media like Facebook or use smartphones all play games, and this is an exciting opportunity that we want to explore. Well, okay. Like, how do we feel about our favorite game developers and franchises working in social space like that?
I say whatever. Let them spread their wings if they want. If it helps them bankroll whatever their next project's going to be that's more geared towards me, then more power to them.
Okay. The question we skipped, by the way, which we will come to next week, Sterling will be here, we'll come to next week, was in that vein of you know, these support games. Mm. Are they just working to help you, or the games that play back and forth cross-platform, you know, like Dungeon Defenders, where you can play on your mobile or you can play on your console?
Yeah.
Are those real, or is that just a fad? So we'll talk about that in some next week. I'm curious. I don't know. Like, I don't know that I really want or want. The problem is there's only so many hours in the day. So, like, how much attention gets siphoned off to do stuff like that?
Yeah.
But at the same time, Facebook games are coming a long way.
Yeah. I mean, what if the alternative is that Facebook games become super awesome? You know, what if it becomes a viable platform for...
That would be cool. It's not there yet.
Yeah.
It's definitely not there. Although there are better games, you know, like I've been doing my Cityville experiment, which is, God, that game's in my head, but not in a good way. Because of the relationships you build. But Jeff Green shared a link to this game called Dungeon Overlords, which is an SOE game that's in beta right now. And it really is very Dungeon Keeper-esque, very much like that, except it has drawbacks of like how long it takes to build stuff and everything. But like the fundamental hurdle I can't get over in playing it is that it only plays in this little awkward Facebook window. You can't blow it up to full screen for whatever reason because the way they've written it. Mm-hmm. And it's really like just, it's clumsy. But like...
Well, that's kind of, the whole point of playing something on Facebook would not be to play it full screen, right? I mean, might as well just be playing a PC game if you're,
but then it's
but
like,
you want to have some kind of social.
So I'm doing Cityville wrong because I always play Cityville in full screen.
Well, I don't, you're asking the wrong guy, so maybe I should just shut up about it. But I would assume that having some sort of Facebook functionality alongside the game is important, but
I don't know. Other games that are upcoming out of our little game announcement window, Moonshot Games, which was formed by three Bungie alumni late last year. That would be Halo 2 and Halo 3 production manager Michael Bastian, and creative director is Rob Stokes, who served as designer and writer on Halo 2, and then Halo 3 was the design lead, and the former Bungie AI and gameplay engineering lead, Damian Isla, as the director of technology. So obviously some very talented dudes out of Bungie created Moonshot Games. They finally announced their first game. It is Fallen Frontier. It's going to be playable, actually, if you are right now at PAX East. Besides,
I wish I was there.
Besides being jealous of you, you're also going to be able to play this game at booth 759. It's a 2D side-scrolling shooter, and I checked out the video of it, and it's really cool. It has like some Bionic Commando feel to it, with the like, you know, like repelling. It looks like there's some sort of like power repelling thing. It's really hard because, you know, demo video goes by really quick. One thing I like they were doing is they're doing co-op, and the split screen, like when you get far enough away, because it's the 2D platformer, when you get far enough away, instead of just expanding the screen or forcing you to stay constrained, it smooth cuts into a split screen. Hmm. And the smooth cut, like, just is dynamic and spins around the screen. It's not like it goes split screen top to bottom or side to side. It's like it just, as you pull away from the other person, it naturally just tears the screen in the center. And then however you move and however your partner moves, it just dynamically readjusts where that tear in the screen is.
Oh my God, that would like stop so much domestic turmoil when I play Lego games with my wife.
Or any Mario game that has co-op, you know, new Super Mario Brothers stuff. Wouldn't that be wonderful if you didn't ever go, oh, just stop running, I'm off the screen.
It was really slick.
Yeah.
It was really, really slick.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
The story seemed like, I mean, I don't know, it's like some space trip to Alpha Centauri, like has this little, you know, origin story at the beginning. It's like, it takes 21 years to fly to Alpha Centauri and you're in sleep the whole time, dead. Many people go to start again. I went for revenge.
Is this like an XBLA PSN game?
They hadn't announced yet, but they are planning for an early 2012 launch. They actually had a follow-up quote that we had on Shaq about how this is, it's a small-scale game, but they're going for big-scale production. Like, you know, again, back to that AAA question.
Yeah.
But they are targeting downloadable for Steam, PSN, and XBLA in early 2012. Serious Sam is coming up later this year with Serious Sam 3. And to help support that, their publisher, Devolver Digital, has come up with a pretty interesting marketing campaign. They're doing three Serious Sam indie games. So, first of all, big, big ups to one of our favorite indie companies, Mommy's Best Games, who's like kind of like had some tough times with some of the stuff they did. They did, of course, they did Explosion Aid, and now they're going to at least get a chance to get paid because they're doing one of them. The one they're doing is Serious Sam Double D.
Of course they are.
Which is a, the way they describe it is a frantic side-scrolling shooter with killer hand-drawn artwork and an innovative weapon stacking system. Hmm. So that'll be cool. I'm sure it'll be interesting or fun to play. And Mommy's Best makes, like they're the right developer to do that sort of anything because like it'll be really, really carefully crafted. It'll be a fun game. The next two, and I say that like that because the next two are much less traditional sorts of things. There's a mobile game coming from developer Lame Castle that's, they describe it as an auto runner. I'm not really sure I know like, what an auto runner is.
Like Robot Unicorn Attack or Bit Trip Runner or those games where you're...
Cannibalt?
Yes. Where you're running no matter what you do.
All right. So that's called Serious Sam Kamikaze Attack. And it stars, of course, the bomb-headed kamikazes of the game. And... B-Rad Entertainment is who making it. They also have made Lame Castle. Sorry, I had that all mixed up there. And then last, and this one's perhaps the most, like, who knows what the hell you're getting out of this, is Serious Sam, The Random Encounter, a turn-based RPG.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
From Flambeer, who have also made Super Crate Box. You'll arm your squad to the teeth with massive ordnance, throw down some special items, and take aim at the hordes of charging enemies holding that sweet, sweet loot you crave so badly.
I love this idea. I wish I was more excited about being Serious Sam that was getting this kind of treatment, because Serious Sam, I don't really have any kind of affection for that character or that universe. But if there were more games that did the kind
you
of...
You don't?
Not really.
Oh my god, dude! I had like
I love the games.
I love Serious Sam. I had really, so much fun with that.
So you're Serious playing Sam a role playing game with you know with like, oh, the bomb got head
I don't know.
Hands dudes and
I thought you were saying you didn't like the environment the world.
I'm just saying these spin-off games is such a great idea, but I just wish I was more attached to that universe to be more excited about these spin-off games. Like maybe an IP that was a little more interesting to me would.
Well, let's flip it on its head. What if they did the same thing for Duke Nukem?
Haven't they? Didn't Duke Nukem have all those like?
I mean, Duke Nukem
weird,
did
like,
stuff, but can you imagine
version?
Like the Duke Nukem? Well, never mind. I was thinking gone Duke Nukem RPG, and I'm like, God, can you imagine what that party would be like?
They could have gone for the dramatic Heavy Rain clone.
That would be great.
Serious Sam, I am.
The Heavy Rain like side-scrolling adventure game. It's like Jason. Chasing Jason, it could be called.
Oh my god, you did not do that.
Oh my god, I was going to say press X to explode bomb head.
It'd be fun.
Jason.
It's a, you know, the auto run game where you have to... Jason! you see a red balloon in the distance and you have to run toward it, dude, leaping over stuff. Watch out for the puddle.
You're going to burn in hell.
Maybe.
You ran out into the green car after 1,500 meters.
Yeah.
What else? Further announcements. Did you play Toy Soldiers, either of you?
Nope.
It's supposed to be fantastic, and I've heard. I have like purchased it and have it sitting on my box from like ever ago. At the same time it came out last year, what was the other game that came out? Scrapyard or not? Like the racing
Scrap Metal?
Scrap Metal or whatever. It was like the racing game. Right, it was like a top-down racing game because they were both. It was like CES 2 years ago. They were both shown. Anyway,
right.
I got both of them, and I wound up playing the racer game, but it wasn't as good as I'd hoped it would be, and it just kind of left me flat. And then I didn't wind up playing Toy Soldiers. But now I want to go back because Toy Soldiers is getting a sequel called Toy Soldiers Cold War. And as you can imagine, obviously, it's set in a more modern setting.
It's Toy Soldiers, and there's no shooting. It's just diplomatic stuff.
That's right. It's all detente.
Tear down that wall, Toy Soldier.
Toy Soldiers detente.
Can we just go ahead and get the Soviet Russia meme out of the way now, just so we don't have to hear it when the game comes out? Begging, pleading.
Go ahead.
No, you guys don't have to do it. I'm just saying, in general, everybody, let's just get it out of our systems. Those of us who like that kind of thing, and just let's move on.
I'm not even following what you're saying.
You know, the in Soviet Russia, game plays you, or whatever the hell people love doing. Okay. It's like, just that shit has been Mike Hagar pile driven into Earth's molten core. Let's let it go.
All right.
So, in case you didn't play Toy Soldier, obviously the idea, or not obviously, the deal of the game that's pretty cool is that it's a kind of hybrid of tower defense and gun, like a shooting gallery sort of a game. So mm-hmm. so you can hop into the guns and right. defend areas, and then there's more interactive parts.
Kind of like Monday Night Combat?
Similar-ish, except not a third person action where you're running around. You're hopping into stops. Like I can hop into a turret and man the turret and defend against places. Or one of the things you can do and fly around, you can hop into planes and fly them around. Hmm. And so you like hold off waves as they attack your fort from different directions. This looks really chaotic. If you look at the video, we have the video on Shaq News. It's like the thing about, of course, modern weaponry is it's much more violent and dynamic and explosive. So there's lots more shit blowing up everywhere. So we'll see how it works out. Could be fun. More announcements. We finally have a date for Deus Ex Human Revolution. It's going. Ooh, yeah, I know.
Right on.
So you ready? August 23rd in America, August 26th in the UK.
Sweet. That's way sooner than I anticipated. Not way sooner.
Well, I mean, they moved it back
a couple of times,
yeah, and now they've been pretty heavy. They've been pretty heavy demoing it. I mean, it seems to be tracking pretty well.
And they're going to have it at PAX this weekend as well, right? That's what I think I'd read.
I don't know. I'm sick. You know what? I'm not talking anymore about PAX because I'm not there, and I'm just jealous.
But dude, you've been outside today.
No,
we'll manage. We'll manage. It's like, what, 72 outside, sun shining? I think I'll manage not going to Boston.
All right.
Just being a jerk.
See, now, here's one of those reasons you might want to play Dragon Age on a computer.
Yeah.
The Hi-Rez pack, released immediately at the launch of the game, is available. You can pick it up on BioWare's site, EA's site, or we also have it at the files section of Shaq News. It's a 1 gig download of much higher detail replacement
That's
textures
fantastic.
For the game.
That's fantastic.
And one of the interesting things about this was one of their ways of handling the certification process that you might have heard talked about. You know, the game has to go into publishers, even a PC game does, to be certified as okay to put out. And that process takes a little while, and then they have to go off to duplication. Well, adding textures is something that they can come back and do very easily. It's not going to break the game engine. It's not going to screw things up. I presume they still had to certify it, but I think they could probably certify that very quickly as a secondary project. So if you want to, you can grab it. It's a gig download. Here are the comments from BioWare. They said, this will add the option to enable higher detail replacements for most of the textures in the game. A big difference will be noticed on level art especially.
And wow, that's so cool.
They recommend that you only use the pack if you have a graphics card with at least, wait for it, a gig of RAM. And most of the benefits are only visible in DX11.
Whoosh.
So if you have modern gear, it'll look awesome.
I wish more games would do this.
I think have higher-res texture packs?
Yeah.
All right. Moving through more PC gaming. Battlefield Heroes. Either of you play the free-to-play Battlefield Heroes?
No.
That was the cartoonized version of Battlefield.
Not to be confused with Battle for Free or whatever it's called.
Play for Free.
Yeah.
Play for number right. four. Play number four free. Play for Free is not bad.
Yeah,
I mean that's real Battlefield, and whereas this is the like more comic book.
It was almost
fun.
Like they borrowed from TF2 a bit.
Yeah, but it was even more not like
which
Looney
is not
Tunes
a triple
almost.
A game.
Scary, you guys are brutal. Anyway, Battlefield Heroes has celebrated its 7 millionth user. Now, funny thing that's was, great. a lot of the folks on Shaq were like, yeah, and 6.5 of them have already left. Hmm. So,
well, hey, 500,000 people playing is good. Very good.
So as part of this, they did a celebration of 7 themed items for the next 7 days. This was 2 days ago, so it'll be running till the middle of next week. Heroes players will get a pack of 77 bandages, 77 battle funds, 77 wrenches if you log on between March 8th and March 15th. So you still have 4 more days after today. But you can also get you can also choose to spend 777 battle funds in exchange for a 7-day boost of your experience points, victory points, and Sarge's stamina, and 777 tonics.
That's a lot of tonics.
That's a lot of sevens. So anyway, if you're interested, Battlefield Heroes is still running, and obviously there's a lot of people playing it. Changing to handhelds, the Nintendo 3DS will be out here in North America in a couple of years. Mark McDonald, a couple of weeks.
It'll still be out in a couple of years too, I'm sure.
That's when the games will start arriving.
Zing.
Mark brought his with him, and we got to check it out. A word of warning from Japanese retailer Enterking, who posted on their site a warning to customers that we have a fairly rough translation of, which I will not embarrass our translation. But basically, it says that if you, it's a warning, is that if you use a illegal or not Nintendo approved equipment on your machine, there's a possibility that your system could be rendered non-bootable by software update. So basically confirming what we had heard and rumored about, which was that...
just means that the pirate stuff isn't backward compatible.
Right.
It's a bit like the Wii. They're just going to have to find ways to continuously evolve and circumvent it, because every software update's going to brick it.
Pretty much.
Yep.
Not like we haven't seen that before in iPhones and PSPs, but I think that the takeaway here is that Nintendo is going to be much more aggressive, as we already knew that, but they're really taking some very stern measures to try and protect their software partners. Now the question is, will that get software partners to do more meaty games for the 3DS? Because I feel like the DS has a small market of really top tier games and a large market of stuff we put together really quick to sell, because there's so damn many DSs we can sell it.
Also licensed stuff.
And because, you know, there are a lot of kids who want to play whatever it is.
They want to be the superhero. When we were kids, we all wanted
Bakugan.
We all wanted to play horrible licensed titles, because we were actually under the illusion that stuff would be good.
For its part, Nintendo did give us the very quick statement of, we do not discuss product security details for obvious reasons, nor can we discuss the details of countermeasures available in the Nintendo 3DS system. Word choice there was very interesting. Countermeasures.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of it's in there, and we'll be actively using it. And
it'll shock you. It'll terminate you immediately.
I was waiting for, and what you gonna do about it?
Exactly. They don't have any problem selling their own handheld games around Nintendo's offices. They have recently announced, or they've announced that they have set new sales records with Pokemon Black and White. The previous sales record has been broken. The pair have sold a combined 1.08 million units on launch day.
Wow. Sales figures. Let me show you them.
So,
that's North America. I mean, that's...
who would have thought Pokemon would have such staying power?
The really? Marketers that invented it?
I guess.
Like, you know, it's from talking to people. This is like, for people who've been playing Pokemon, this is kind of like I don't want to say the Everest, but it's kind of like, this is the height of one of the highest points of like what they've done on the DS. And this is like apparently like an event Pokemon. Uh-oh. Like, it's a really big deal what they've done with this game, apparently.
Are we in the second decade of Pokemon? Are we in the... Is it 20 years old?
Not quite. The first time I'd ever heard of Pokemon was like in 97, when Japanese kids were having seizures and it made world news. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of it.
Hmm. I mean, we can knock Pokemon for being created by marketers, and the Pokemon part of it is, but the game part of it is, you know, tried and true traditional Japanese role-playing game from that era of...
It's evocative of what Nintendo does best.
Yeah.
Reiterate. Reduce, reuse, recycle, reiterate. Something like that, right?
Interesting, considering our whole conversation about innovation and Iwata talking about, you got to innovate to survive.
You do. You make another rendition of a classic formula.
While we're on the subject of sales records, Microsoft has... I think they sort of conscripted Guinness on this, because like... how does Guinness know this if you're not telling them? But anyway, the Guinness Book of World Records has crowned the Microsoft Kinect the fastest-selling consumer electronics device ever, after it sold approximately 8 million units in its first 60 days. Microsoft has also gone on to announce that they are now over 10 million standalone Kinect games sold. So they're selling hardware and they're selling games. Gaz Deves of the Guinness Book of World Records said the sales figures here speak for themselves. According to independent research, no other consumer electronics device sold faster within a 60-day time span, which is an incredible achievement considering the strength of the sector.
How much software was that, you said?
Over 10 million.
Wow, that's a lot of fighters uncaged.
Do you remember when? Remember when we were all like, Microsoft's announcing Kinect. It's going to be the fastest selling consumer electronics device of all time. Remember how we all nailed that in the games press? Remember how every single person got that right?
I think I got it right. I'm never wrong. What's your point, Kanata? The hell are you trying to do? You undermining the
cynicism,
damn show? Are you undermining
the
show?
Most of the time. I'm not. It's crazy to me that it has sold more than iPhones and more than, you know, any consumer electronics device. It's wild.
Well, I mean, it seems like it's an attractive device that just, it has buzz. It's accessible to people and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg.
I think, unfortunately, it's a testament to the marketing.
Yeah.
Because
huge.
Because where the fuck are the games? Where the hell are they
selling the ones that they put out?
And they're still the launch games.
Yep. Yeah.
So basically what they did was they created, I mean, it's not the Wii in technology, but they created the next Wii thing in that here's this really cool thing. You put it in your den. You're going to have a great time with it. You're going to play with your friends. You're going to have your family over, blah, 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 blah. And they totally convinced people of that message and made that stick.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for that market, do you really need to constantly have X amount of games? No, because those people only buy like a very finite amount of games every year.
All the years we've looked at the NPD say exactly that. The Nintendo numbers are that stuff just keeps selling.
Precisely. So for now, we don't need to worry about it. We're probably not going to see very much until E3, and then we're going to start to see the next wave of Kinect games, and maybe one or two of those will probably be interesting to people in this room, and then a lot of other stuff will be interesting.
Maybe
the
stuff they showed at TGS. I mean, there's some interesting stuff waiting in the wings.
That's a good point.
I hope there's some more interesting stuff waiting in the wings. Hopefully. Jeff, do you want some free stuff for your avatar?
Do I?
I don't know. You could get a lab coat. A lab coat, a brain helmet, and
a brain helmet for my brain.
I don't even know what a brain helmet is. And
protects my brain.
I'm going to guess it's a helmet that looks like a brain, like Mars Attacks, dude.
Well, sure, if you want to think about it that way.
And mad scientist hair.
Ooh.
I know, it's awesome, right?
That is awesome.
All you have to do is let your Xbox saturate your internet connection for hours at a time.
That sounds easy.
They're running a program that's called Xbox Live Labs. So basically what you do is you get this little program. You can get it from the Xbox Live store, and you run it. And when you turn it on, it tests your network connection, because what they're trying to do is judge how Xbox Live works on different types of internet connections, obviously, and what kind of bandwidth and data throughput they could get, etc. Now, some of the things I was reading in the comments to this that have already come up is that it seems like it runs for a period of time, not a quantity of data, and that it pushes as hard as it can. So, you know, if you have any qualms about like your internet provider and how much data you get from them or them throttling you, you might want to think twice before you use it. But, you know, if you have an unlimited and you're not worried about it, I mean, obviously, I don't think it'd be more than, I don't know, like a few gigs, but.
And then you get a sweet brain helmet.
Or you get Doc Brown hair. Marty, we've got to give up the bandwidth! Or something like that.
So there you go. You cannot, also worthy to note, you cannot play games or watch movies while using the app. So you'll probably want to set it up to run overnight or to do its thing like when you're not around.
Kind of like Folding at Home was for PS3.
It's very similar.
Except not altruistic in any way.
Not at all. I was thinking
that. It's altruistic to us because we want our games to work better. We want our network environment to work better.
Maybe.
So yeah,
that's a way to look at it.
So I just like, after those couple of warnings, certainly if you have the bandwidth and can handle it, do run it, because ultimately it'll help them have the more data they have, the better our ultimate network environment's going to be. Maybe if they had done testing, they would have had a better liftoff for games for Windows Live. Which,
wait, that still happened?
That's still. I just find, yeah. So. Kevin Unagust, who is the Microsoft Interactive Entertainment senior producer, and Kevin's been around the Microsoft PC world for quite a long while, was interviewed by CBG, and he admitted that Windows Live, which of course is separate from Games for Windows, this is the actual live multiplayer service running in the Games for Windows environment, got off to a rocky start. The service started with the right intent, which was to bring achievements, friends, multiplayer gaming, and matchmaking in a great way to the PC.
We had the intent down. We got the intent.
I think because it was designed originally as a partner to the console service more than the PC service, we had a rocky start. Backtrack big time. Do you remember them ever saying it was designed as a partner to the console system? Hello?
I'm just like...
are we supposed to...
Rocky start is like understatement of God knows what. Yeah.
They never sold this as like as anything other than it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. It is real live. We're doing it the right way. We're building it from the ground up. I mean, the problem they have is now they've bled so many people and Steam has become so dominant in the space. I don't know what they do to save it.
Yeah.
Kanye shrug.
I mean, they've lost, for instance, they've lost the Warhammer Dawn of War series. They are not going to get the Warhammer Space Marine series, obviously, because THQ's giving up on it. Kanan Lynch jumped ship on him. Kanan Lynch 2 Kanan Lynch 2 isn't. And, you know, other than their internal stuff, who's going to go Games for Windows Live? What's the compelling argument to go Games for Windows Live?
Steam owns the space.
Yep. The rest of his comments were, we also didn't back it up with the most important thing, which is doing fantastic games to take advantage of the service. A network by itself isn't valuable. There needs to be great games to take advantage. I look at it like what Halo did for Xbox Live, where you had Bungie and Microsoft going back and saying, to make a great multiplayer game, here's some things I need in the service. Here's my audience. I think the underpinnings are great. I think it's going to continue to get better. When did it start getting better? Sorry, guys. I mean, even though y'all are really nice, and I know you're trying really hard, Games for Windows Live's a mess. I think it's symptomatic of the less than stellar emphasis Microsoft has given gaming at all in the last 3 years.
On the PC. I mean,
Games for Windows was fairly stillborn. It was interesting for about 6 to 8 months. It turned into a marketing and box branding package. And even with 7, you know, my part of it also may just be how much trouble they got into with Vista. Like they definitely resuscitated Windows with 7. People are back behind Windows. They're like, wow, 7 is XP. 7 is really good, really solid. But the problem is, like, when they were going into Vista was when they were having that big push for games. You were going to have, like, the game performance number, and they were going to have all that stuff tied in. Remember, it was we all big on gaming. And then Vista hit, and everyone was like, man, Vista's a turd. And somehow the shit just hasn't been wiped off of Games for Windows. You know, it's like, that thing's
still... Do
you really
think that's the problem with it?
I do think it's a big part of it, yeah.
I think
where's the push for games for Windows in Windows 7? Other than, yeah, it works. Windows 7 works really good for games, but we'd like to talk about all the things it does.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think it's a compound problem between not having games that support it and having this perfectly good solution called Steam that everybody loves and needs no competitor because...
I agree, but flash back a couple of 3 years, and when Steam was first coming on, it had a lot of detractors. A lot of people were frustrated with it. The client was bulky. It had memory leaks. It had, you know, all kinds of issues where it was not as easy to use as it is now. It's what we see now is a process of a great refinement program and a lot of momentum building. And there's no reason that when you own the platform, you couldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But Steam got there.
Hindsight.
Steam established themselves.
Now they're in a whole other ballgame.
Yeah.
I would hate to be trying
so
to figure
behind.
That out. And then our last little bit of online news for today would be that the latest PS3 update, which you probably got yesterday, that would be System Software Update version 3.6, enabled cloud backup of your save game files. But the important part here is it also enables you to cloud backup your protected save files, which up to now you had not been able to copy onto like a USB stick or anything to back them up.
Yep.
Which is a big deal. So there's
That's huge.
So... gives you portability of your game saves. Obviously, not obviously, you can't play the game off of the save file. So this is literally like a backup in the sky. You transfer files up there and hold them there, and you bring them back down to your local machine when you would play them. But it does give you the ability to go someplace else and download them. I don't understand why they have a limitation of only once every 24 hours.
Oh, it depends on the game. So there's certain games like, as soon as you said, yep, they have this cloud thing, I'm like, yes, I already only have about 35 megs left on mine out of 150.
Oh, you cleared.
I was like, copy last night.
Cool.
But a lot of what they do is, so like, there's games like Warhawk, for example, where they had to put a restriction on Warhawk because it was one of the first digital titles back in 2007, and they didn't want people exploiting the game sharing loophole.
Okay.
So there's a lot of restrictions on that kind of thing. And I believe, if I recall correctly, What was another? There's a few of them that were like kind of a pain. I believe Rock Band's another one where it's tightly restricted because I play Rock Band on PS3, so I'm acutely aware of the restrictions they place on that game and what you can do with it.
So as someone who uploaded a bunch of stuff, does the 150 meg feel like enough space?
As long as, you know what, there's a certain
some
amount
of some of those PS3 save games are huge.
Yep, and those are the ones I didn't upload. Like, I thought about it, and I was looking, and I was like, Tony Hawk's Proving Ground, you're 12 megs? Fuck you, you're not getting on the cloud. I don't even have you anymore. There's like certain games where I was going
through.
You're
not cloud worthy,
Tony Hawk. Exactly.
Get off my cloud.
Hey, you, get off my
cloud. I knew it.
Couldn't resist. So, there's certain games where actually as I'm going through, I had to go through all my save data and I was like, oh my God, I don't even own these games anymore. You don't go on the cloud. But it's very, very handy. You know, there's some people that are like, well, why would you want something like that? I'm like, why wouldn't you? If I go to somebody's house and I have some like amazing data file or something, or I've uploaded a bunch of photos or something like that to the cloud of something in some game, my friend has a copy. I go, I recover my file, I pull it up, bam. This is awesome. Check this out.
There you go. You going to use it, Jeff?
I wish it did it automatically. I think that'd be better. But
also, it's $50 for PSN Plus, and you have to be a Plus member to use this.
I don't need it that much.
I wish it wasn't exclusive, but I understand that they're providing storage space, and it is a premium feature. So, there you go. All right, there you go, folks. That is the big show. Now we are to the new wrap-up. That would be the finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Sterling, you're our guest, so I will let you go first. Finish him.
All right, I'm just going to go really, really quick here. Right now I'm reading Reality is Broken by Jane McGonigal. Highly recommend it. I'm just starting to scratch the surface on it, so definitely a good read, worth checking out. Also, this is probably a good opportunity for me to shill for my publication, EGM. Yes, I work there. I manage the reviews there, so yes, read EGM.
Available in print and online.
That is correct, at EGMnow.com. And finally, just because it's obligatory, and I'd feel bad if I didn't, Forza Roma. They got a big game this weekend. It's all on the line.
All right, there you go. Jeff, finish him.
Lots of small GDC games that fall through the cracks easily. One that I really had fun with and that I wanted to mention is Bandai HD Missile Fury.
Missile Fury!
Which will be an XBLA, I believe, and also PSN. They were showing it on the 360. And I'm not a big bullet hell guy, but there's enough interesting stuff with proximity to you, with the like letting bullets get close to you so that you can ricochet them back, that made the game really unique and interesting. And I have never seen more missiles on one screen in any game ever. It is wild. So super fun.
I'm really hopeful for in my finishing move is I'm really hopeful that someone will go back and look at what Sin tried to do when it went episodic, because back to that $40 game thing, that as soon as that subject came up, that popped back into my head. And I know I've championed that before, but that was a company that tried to make a AAA caliber bite-sized game, develop an engine, have a system that could come back and repeat it. Unfortunately, it didn't do well enough, but I think it might have just been ahead of its time. With the way we have digital distribution, somebody take a shot at that, try and do real episodic content in that space. All right, there you go. Big show. The feature track was Spirit. That was from Tabernacle MCs, and we will have all the detail on how to get a hold of them on Facebook, Reverb Nation, and stuff in the show notes. You can catch Jeff every week on the Totally Rad Show, of course.
Indeed.
How's the weekly shows going? Are you enjoying it still?
You mean daily shows?
I mean daily. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, super awesome.
Pretend that I said dailies.
I will. Super awesome. I think we got two movie reviews this week and coming up. And
which ones?
Battle LA and Paul. And I will not spoil those for anybody. Also, JeffCanada.com. I'm doing videos there now, too. So,
did you redid your blog again? I saw.
Yeah,
it looks
exactly.
Good.
Yep. And looks really good. I did a big thing on Battlefield 3 last week for GDC. And how about you doing more? So,
all right. Sterling's already gotten his promo stuff in. He did finishing moves and finishing moves all in finishing moves.
All at once.
Look at that.
I did have to interject having seen Battle LA. I'm so sorry.
Did you read Ebert's review?
Yes. And I was like, that is the perfect dressing down of that movie. Can't get those 116 minutes of my life back.
Yeah, there you go. All right, everybody, thanks very much for joining us. Next week, we celebrate the one-year anniversary of Weekend Confirmed with a 50-second show, and I will have details coming up on Twitter and on the Shack News thread on how you can contribute, because we're going to make it a very audience participatory show. And, we're going to give away a mouse. Like a real mouse? Oh, we're going to give away. I thought you said a mouse. Were you going to give away a rat or a mouse?
Wait,
I'm not
what?
Sure. Oh, it's not really as fun when you can't hear him that I'm playing this. Like, it's like, who's on first? Who's on first? We're going to give away a wireless rat mouse. A wireless rat mouse from Mad Catz.
Easy God. For you to say.
That Jeez is loaded. Louise. Let's hope it doesn't give you rabies, yeah?
Exactly. I don't know. And we'll come up with some other stuff to give away, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, there's your big show. That's your weekend confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.